Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
On site, Action Radio presents the Petty Report.
Good morning, Action Radio land. Do we have a homeless in Seattle? No, we have homeless in Seattle.
Uh-oh.
And also, but we're going to start with the story of the day, Greg. This story is groundbreaking, and it's revolutionary. Are you ready?
Well, let's go to the newsroom. Hang on. And hot off the presses, Bill Fecky with today's scoop.
And the story of the day. Teenagers always find a way to get high. That's right.
This is news?
Yeah. So
ever since Og the Cave Boy, you know, at the age of 12, discovered mushrooms, you know, back several, you know, multiple millennia ago, this is not new news.
So teenagers in India... you know, leave it to the scientific minds of India to do this.
Uh-huh. Tell me about the story of India. What did they find there? And which province are we talking about in India? Excuse my bad accent, India. We have Indian listeners. I just play with accents. Don't mind me. Go ahead.
So they started boiling flavored condoms in water and sniffing it, which gives them a nice little buzz. And so that's that gets them high.
Wait. Stop right there. Would you say that again, please? They're doing what?
In India, teenagers in India.
Where'd you go? Hello, Bill.
You got it?
I was gonna say, oh, no, you disappeared there for a second. So am I to understand they're boiling condoms in India and then like catching the aroma and a buzz?
Yes, flavored condom.
Flavored condoms. Should I ask what makes them flavored, or should I save that for next week's sex report? And why they're flavored? Did you hear a report yesterday? Oh my God. Yes, we're going into areas that I never thought Action Radio would go in. But actually, I'm kind of happy with it. It's fascinating. Dorothy Diana is our new sex and sensuality reporter. She's a sex ed teacher, master's degree in nursing. But just it was we got into listen to yesterday. I don't want to do that. It was pretty intense. Anyway, so flavored. Dare I ask why? No, I shouldn't ask why they're flavored.
Well,
don't go there, Greg. Just don't.
I know the reason. Yeah,
We should have this. We need like the breakfast disclaimer. All you folks that you're having or about to, or you know, while you're enjoying your morning coffee and think, well, I'll just listen to Action Radio. What a nice thing. We'll just get the news and away we go. And all of a sudden, Bill starts off with flavored condoms in India. I bet you didn't expect that. You know, I didn't. You know, what else is going on, Bill? While we're at it, you know.
So let's talk about
the latest
topic,
yak-flavored donuts in Mongolia is the new craze. I mean,
if you do want to go down that track, there is a ice cream company that the name escapes my brain at the moment that does different, like, weird flavors.
Weird
like
flavors.
They have a jalapeno cheddar ice cream, for example.
Huh. Well, I think once I had that green tea ice cream, I pretty much lost it from there. I'm a more traditionalist, you know, butter crunch, praline, caramel, you know, some of those
praline
blue ones.
And cream.
Yeah, those ones. Yeah, those are fine. Chocolate chip cookie dough. But if you're going to have green tea ice cream, I mean, green tea is traditionally hot. Ice cream is not. So to mix the two, just, I mean, what are you going to have next? Shrimp off the Barbie ice cream?
Well, don't give them any ideas, but the green tea ice cream isn't bad. There's also a red bean ice cream that you could get in many Chinese restaurants that's actually, it's tolerable. It's not bad at all. So,
okay.
You know, you can throw sugar on anything and make it tolerable.
Well, I suppose you can, except maybe mustard. Well, I don't know. I'll have to think about that. Do we have steak ice cream yet? Steak and A1 sauce ice cream? So you can have your dinner and then have your dinner for dessert. Anyway, we do digress, which we started the whole thing digressing. So let me get a scientific question for you here. What causes the state of highness? That's not right. What causes you to get high from boiling a flavored condom as opposed to a regular condom? Dare I ask?
So,
lubricated condoms, have a different effect?
It's very simple. The flavored condoms have a special chemical that gives you that flavor taste. And so that when that chemical is boiling, the chemical actually goes into the air. The only thing I can think of that comes close to this is, I don't know if you did this as a kid or not, but a lot of teenagers did a thing called Rush as a kid.
What's that?
Did you ever do Rush?
I've never heard of it.
Liquid. So it's a liquid. I don't know exactly what's in it, but you just basically sniff it, and it gives you this massive buzz. But if you do it too much, it gives you a massive headache, and it's just like a really horrible.
Sounds like glue, like the glue that we used to use to make model airplanes. Of course, you know, being the Boy Scout that I was, I had an incredibly well ventilated room, a fan, you know, all kinds of other stuff, and used glue very sparingly and always kept it sealed when not in use, just because it was dangerous. But I like making model airplanes. I made hundreds of them. But that was the only thing. But of course, everybody warned us, you know, don't get near the fumes of the glue and the big warning labels. So we didn't. But some kids did. And of course, their brains fried. So that was a problem.
Yep.
The only other thing I know was, I think they called them whippets, which were the nitrous oxide containers that powered those air powered wine bottle openers. Mm-hmm. You know, they had little canisters for that.
You buy the whippets like the spray can with cream, not the with whipped cream. You don't shake it up. You make sure that you have it sitting down for a certain period of time, so all the
whipped you're good at this.
Sets to the bottom.
Okay, yeah, fine. You know how this works. I have no idea.
And then the nitrous oxide rises to the top, and then you kind of you put your mouth over it, then you kind of tilt the nozzle so that it starts. And the very first part of the spray is all the nitrous oxide before the whipped cream hits. And like I said, teenagers are always going to find a way to get high, whatever it is.
Yeah, I use Cessna aircraft myself. That was my high of choice. First of all, it was legal. Secondly, it was no brain alteration other than the fact that it was a lot of endorphins, I'm sure, as I'm up there by myself going, wow, I'm up here at 3,000 feet. This is cool, you know, in a little Cessna 150. But I would say when you're 16 years old and you're flying a Cessna by yourself, that's a really cool feeling. Trust me, I felt literally on top of the world. That was amazing. All right, anyway, but the point is, though, the whippets thing, the nitrous oxide, I think it's called laughing gas. That's what dentists use under, you know, controlled conditions, you know, so that you can be put under in a way that's very mild. I don't know. Do they still do that? Do dentists still do that? Or do they have to give you the shot in the jaw?
Every time I go, I get a shot in the jaw. So I haven't had laughing gas. I've never had laughing gas. I've always had a shot. So
yeah, I don't think they do
that
anymore.
More your age.
My age? Oh, here we go. Here's the age discrimination. The youthful and sprightly, Bill Fecky here. What's that line that Ronald Reagan said? Well, I will not make age an issue in this campaign. I will not take advantage of my opponent's youth and inexperience.
Exactly.
But here's the crazy thing, though, Bill. I mean, this is an interesting story because somebody had to actually do this. They had to actually boil a condom, a flavored condom, as opposed to other condoms. You know, lubed, unlubed, you know, various other things that are spermicides, you know, whatever else is put on condoms, right? And so they had to actually do this and inhale the fumes. So, which makes you wonder what else they boil, you know, or how many other condoms.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or what else do they boil? I mean, I don't know.
So this is my theory. Okay, so this is my theory. Okay.
You can't wait.
So, no, it's actually very plausible here. So in India, they're very poor. They're obviously poor. I'm actually surprised that there's condoms in India. I'm actually surprised that there's condoms in India. I really am. I didn't think that.
Is there anything in Hindu that would preclude condoms or birth control? I know Catholics don't like birth control because they want more Catholics. But that's a church teaching. But is there anything in Hindu? This is like a Wendy question.
Yeah, it would be because I'm interested to find out because I'm pretty much shocked in India, but I'm just wondering. The one thing that the report didn't go into is was this a science experiment or was this actually just a bunch of kids doing this? Maybe they just were working on a specific chemical and they found.
Or maybe somebody dropped a condom into boiling water by mistake. I mean, you wouldn't think it would be effective for its intended purpose after being boiled, something tells me.
Okay, so this goes into my theory is, when you boil something, you sterilize it. So maybe since they are so poor, they're trying to reuse a condom and they thought they could sterilize it by boiling it.
Doubtful.
Yeah, I know. The theory doesn't make sense. Yeah, the theory doesn't make sense.
No, doubtful. But... I mean, these are one use. And the other thing is they come in a sterile package. So there's a...
Yeah.
Well, as I have said, the problem with condoms is not using them. It's buying them.
Exactly.
We joked about the other day on the sex report. But, yeah, it's like, guys, especially when you're younger, the first thing, whenever you go to buy your first condoms, right, there's always a female clerk, always. And there's always like three women, of middle to older age behind you in line. there you are. Whatever teenage age you're at, it's just one of life's great moments, that we don't talk about until, 40 years later. But anyway, go ahead.
So, but let's talk about a serious subject here.
Homeless in Seattle.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. Homeless in Seattle. See how I played the words? It says sleepless.
I did. It was
Seattle.
Brilliant. I got the reference. You're good.
Yes. So
okay, fine.
So business owners and property owners in Seattle are finally fed up, and they are installing 1-ton eco bricks in front of their house or business.
It's all legal
what they're doing, but they're doing it because Seattle, big surprise here, is turning into a shanty town. There's RVs and homeless camps everywhere, parking on the street in front of people's houses in their RVs, which is not illegal because the street is public property. It's not private property.
But there's a time limit.
Private street, of course.
This is like a 72-hour time limit if you park on the street. Yeah, most places.
Well, in some cities, it's 24 hours, and it just so happens I was reading this report, and then I went on to one of the Facebook pages for one of the neighborhoods here in Pensacola. It's called East Hill. And they actually had someone post something about an RV that was parked in front of their house. And so they called the police. They have it told. They said, no, you got to wait 24 hours for that to happen. So it's a case-by-case basis, I think, depending on the city. But, Seattle and all their wokeism is the third highest homeless rate in the country for cities. The state of Washington is the fifth highest state for homeless people. So it's really crazy. You got homeless camps everywhere. Of course, the businesses are concerned about those homeless camps in front of their business. Homeless camps attract rats. And if you have a restaurant and trying to pass a health inspection when you have a homeless camp right there that's attracting rats, you're pretty much going to get shut down. And
well, you
the
often
other
lose
thing
customers,
about the
home- too. No one's going to go there. People have to cross through a homeless camp to get to a restaurant. They're not going to go. They're going to go to their local suburban restaurants. They're not going to go into the city. So I lived in San Francisco. Well, actually, I was across in Oakland for a while. But before I left, I remember I got to San Francisco in the 80s. It had a homeless problem, but it was small. I had a drug problem, but it was mostly in the Tenderloin. And you could walk pretty much anywhere. I mean, I raised a kid there. And we were all over the city. The neighborhoods were fabulous. And fortunately, she grew up before things got bad. But, you go there now, and there are tent cities, and there's poop in the streets. And you got needles. You can see them right there, in the gutters. And the people, it's a horrible situation. And they think this is okay. And the whole West Coast. But part of the attraction of the West Coast, A, is a lot of welfare between Washington, Oregon, and California, and B, the weather's tolerable. I mean, if you're going to spend a winter, would you rather spend it in Seattle or Minnesota? I mean, it's really no choice. You know, so it's much milder weather,
no,
so
I
that
agree.
Attracts all these people, too. Yeah.
But once again, it's all this woke mentality that has allowed mm-hmm. this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's and finally, all these woke people are starting to truly wake up and realize that those woke mentality is going to get them broke.
Well, yeah, woke
and
is broke.
So
well, it's interesting, yeah. I mean, it's okay to talk about the homeless problem as an altruistic enterprise until they're outside your door. You know, it's a different thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like people don't want a gun until their house is put into. It's, oh, gee, well, maybe that wasn't. Well, I'll get one just for me, but no one else can have one. You know, I mean, this is how liberals think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is. And it's one of the NIMBY things, too, which liberals mm-hmm. are great at.
Mm-hmm.
NIMBY stands for not in my backyard.
Mm-hmm. Or front yard, in this case.
You know,
so they'd be
like NIMBYs? Exactly, or front yard. Yeah.
Can we say NIMBY on the radio?
Yeah.
Not in my front yard.
Yeah, why not? We're saying everything.
NIMBY has other implications, though, so we better stick with NIMBY. Are you a NIMBY? What? Are you accusing me of a sexual deviation? No, I just said, do you want homeless in your front yard? Okay, fine. That's a different story. Okay, fine. Different question.
So,
oh, NIMBY. There we go.
Yeah, but
in my front yard.
I mean, in a way, though, aren't they like a version of a NIMBY, the way that they act?
Mm-hmm.
In their obsession? It's not that much different now, is it?
Well, obsessions are obsessions. Again, we talked about that yesterday in great detail. It was fascinating how this works. Yeah. Well, and here's an interesting question for you now that you bring it up. Is wokeness an obsession? Are people, you know, so entrenched in this belief system? It strikes me as a cult. But are people, once they get, you know, woke, are they dependent on maintaining their wokeness for some kind of mental dependence or conditioning? Do they find that if they try to change it, there's somehow they lose their social status, their bearing, their self-identity? You know, in other words, are they trans-woke? You know, is there a trans-wokeness back to normal life in a regular perspective?
Well, I think that they get down to that point where they can't go back. It just seems like that they've reached a certain point. Is like, okay, we've gone this far.
Mm-hmm.
We have to continue to go. Otherwise, we'll lose our woke status. And we had an interesting conversation at the office yesterday. We actually mm-hmm. had our first patient claim to be a they. And, instead of a she, because I made the mistake of calling her she. And I got corrected for it as, you know, they, but the conversation, and I'm not going to, you know, it's a business environment. I'm not going to debate them, right? You know, debate them.
Well, how did it come up without revealing personal information? How is this person addressed as she, and how did they correct you? I'm kind of curious how this works.
So they're trying to set an appointment. So I'm like, okay, she's not due for any vaccinations. Okay. And then,
nobody is. sorry, Bill.
Yeah, well, you know, anyway, so.
Yeah, go ahead. Right.
I hate it saying that because I know you want to bring that up, but we're not going to bring it up. So then the mom goes, they. So I responded, oh, I thought you only had the one child. I didn't know you had two children.
That's a perfect answer. That's great.
What
was that one
goes,
child?
No.
You're talking about her. She.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So then she responded to me saying, no, that's how they want to be. That's how they want to be addressed. And I started thinking about the word they. All right. So, you know, I didn't say this to mom, even though I really wanted to smack mom.
Slow
up
day on
head.
The job or something? Or what? I mean.
Yeah. So,
let's think about the word they. Okay. The plural of he
the
or
word
she.
They.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's a group. So
it
you're
is. It's a plural.
You're actually by. Right. So you, by. Actually calling someone they, is that mm-hmm. any different than some of the comments that are being made, like, oh, those people, or, oh, it's them? You know, I mean, it's a very derogatory, it could be turned into a very derogatory statement or pronoun that gets used a lot of times in racist ways when you're talking about, you know, oh, them, you know, those people are like that. You know, you could be talking about black people or Asian people or
like you
like
people.
That
was so, that was how Ross Perot got in trouble. But I got the word they, the dictionary, the online dictionary, which is subject to revision like recession. In other words, it says pronoun. Okay. A pronoun is something that, that modifies a noun. A noun is a thing. It's for those of you that failed grammar in the third grade. Pronoun used to refer to two or more people or things previously mentioned or easily identified. The two men could get life sentences if they are convicted. That's the one they give. People in general, the rest, as they say, is history. Okay. Informal, a group of people in authority regarded collectively. They cut my water off. This is all control things of the dictionary. Well, I guess that's the modern way it goes. It says singular, used to refer to a person of unspecified gender. This is new. Okay, here's the new definition. They've made up a new one for you, okay?
Yeah.
Used to refer to a person of unspecified gender, ask someone if they could help, okay? Well, unspecified, that doesn't make sense. everybody has a gender. Actually, everybody has a sex. You're either male or female. So this is how they've modified the dictionary version. And so now they're saying that that a singular can be a plural. So what it does to me, it violates the English language because the English language defines singular and plural. Okay, he or she identifies sex as male or female. They identifies a group of either males, females, or both. And so to say they is the proper English usage. So not only do these people want to change the English language, they want to redefine sex, first of all, by calling it gender, and secondly, by saying you don't have a gender, which is a theft of your identity. It's actually a form of identity theft. Ooh,
yeah.
How's that for a thought?
So, okay, so my question is, you have a transgender English teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Does she keep her job if she wants to be referred to as they?
Well, first of all, we've redefined transgender on this show, and Wendy's on the line, too, because we did ask her to call in.
Good. Yep.
All right, so she's,
I got a huge question. Let's get Wendy on the show.
Wendy is on the show.
I got
Wendy.
A great question.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling in early.
Good morning, Wendy. So the question of the day, okay, that's why I wanted to bring you on early. With everything that's going on inside the church right now, the division between abortion and gay marriages, will there be a civil war within Christianity and Christian churches before there's a civil war in America?
Funny you should ask.
Okay. Now I'm curious. I should have given you a drum roll. Let me give you a quick drum roll here, and then I'll see if I can... The question of the day. There we go. So I actually can limit my sound effects. There we go. So there we have the question of the day. And the question of the day is civil war in the Christian church. Okay. Well, actually, it would be a religious war, wouldn't it? It wouldn't be civil. Civil implies a non-religious government to people war. But I digress.
Well, this is a God war, actually.
Okay.
Because there's God is very patient, and he is long-suffering, and he doesn't wish that anybody perish. He wants everyone to be able to have the benefits that he has so graciously supplied to us. But in order for that to happen, you have to be in agreement with God. And all of this stuff that is happening is not in agreement with God, and he has been speaking to the prophets lately that it's done, that judgment starts in the house of God, and that he is fed up with what the so-called pastors are doing to the people, because they are leading them astray. The pastors are leading the congregations astray by saying this is okay and that is okay, which goes completely against what God states in his word. And he said, it's time. He is going to start cleaning out pulpits. So watch for some major leaders in the so-called Christian church to fall, and realize that when this happens, it's not because it's all of a sudden God flips a switch and you know, here, I'm mad at you. No, this is, you have been warned. Because if you claim to know me, you should be hearing me in my spirit. You should be hearing me through what I say in my written word that does not change. And he himself says, I do not change. I am the same yesterday, today, and forever. You're not going to change what God says is right or wrong. So those who are purposely and with an agenda opposing God's word while standing in the pulpit saying they represent him are on very dangerous ground right now. So God himself is going to start exposing because they have been warned, they've been spoken to, and on multiple occasions in different ways, and they have ignored it and have continued in their anti-Christ agenda. So, and I'm not talking 666, I'm talking literally anti-Jesus, because this is not what Jesus taught and it's not what God says. And if you're going to say that I am speaking for God, you had better be trembling in your boots, because you better be speaking what God speaks. If you're not speaking what God speaks, you've just invited a whole bunch of hell coming into to your territory, or what you think is your territory, because that pulpit's God's and it's not yours to do with whatever you want to. So yeah, you're going to start seeing that happen, and you're going to be really surprised at some of the people you see bring down, that God brings down. So if that answers your question.
Yeah, well, I think some of us may be surprised, but I think other of us are kind of waiting for certain big names to fall without actually getting into the names right now.
Go ahead.
You know,
I'm curious.
Some of them have been kind of exposed over the years as it is, making money off of God's name, and even though they're not really doing God's work, keeping churches closed in a time, you know, locked doors during a time of need when people are looking for shelter. And I won't go into any, I won't mention Joel Osteen's name specifically today, but you know,
subtle Bill. Yeah, a little subtle. So who are the sides that are lining up in your war? You know, is this Christian churches against God? Is it Christian churches against other Christian churches? Who are the sides that you're talking about in this war? And we got Pianca in the line too. I'll bring him on in a second. How is this lining up?
Are you talking to Bill and me?
I'm talking to Bill. Who are the, if you think there's a war, who are the two sides we're talking about? I'm a little unclear on that.
All right. So right now, so recently 23,000 clergymen just came out and supported abortion.
That's interesting.
It was between Jewish and Christian. They all came out, mostly in New York, obviously. Which just tells me that they're in it more for the money than they are about spreading God's word, and which is obviously against God.
Do they run abortion clinics out of the church? I mean, I'm just curious. Are they affiliated, or they donate to, or does Catholic Charities, for example? Well, they wouldn't do it. At least I hope not. But are there church-affiliated abortion clinics? How's that for a question? Has anybody looked into that?
That'd be an interesting research. I might do a little research on that one, because that's a good question.
Go for it for next week.
But what you're seeing, though, like the Methodist Church is already splitting, or they're talking about splitting over the gay marriage. So you're starting to see tiny splits. And,
well, that's a big one.
You know, and so I started,
it's a tiny one.
Yeah, well, it is. Well, it is a big one. You know, and so I started thinking, you know, are we actually seeing, I know what you mean by the word civil war and stuff like that, but I was just using it to make it as plain, as simple as possible for people
fine.
To understand.
Yeah. I was just curious for myself.
So it kind of seems like that we're already starting a civil war. And I go to a couple different, I listen to a couple different churches and different preachers, and it sounds like the words they're speaking, it really is kind of, it's kind of a prelude to something major about to happen. When we're talking about split and one church going against another church, will we see something like we used to see back in the Middle Ages, where, you know, with the Crusades is a great example. Could we see another Crusade start here in America with the Christians and fighting for the conservative beliefs versus the so-called Christians or the atheists on the other side who want the abortion and gay marriage? Will that actually be the next American civil war, which will start inside the church? That's really kind of my question for Wendy today.
Well, that's actually been going on. If you'll notice, or remember back in the 80s, the Presbyterian Church, had a big split because the Reformed Presbyterian Church wanted to go the way of whatever the trend of, you know, the liberal agenda was. And the Presbyterian Church of America said, no, you know, that is not what God says. And you know, this is not what we have preached for, you know, literally, you know, 100 years or so, you know, here in America, or, you know, and more than that across the world. So that happened, that big split happened in the 80s. And then the Methodist Church, there were rumblings, you know, because, you know, they have gay pastors and all that kind of stuff now. And the traditional Methodists didn't want to go that route. And but the majority of the Methodists did. You know, they went to the liberal agenda side. So then there was a big split in the Methodist Church. And they actually had, you know, their great big, you know, once a year meeting thing where they had to address that. And so that kind of defined the lines, and the traditional Methodist Church said, no, we're not going with that. We are staying with God's word. And so more Methodist breakoffs came, you know, because the church is split over that, decision. So this has been going, and that was in the 90s. So you're going to be seeing this more and more and more because God's drawing a line in the sand, and the pastors are going to have to, you know, either stand up and say what side they're on, or get booted out, or they can stand up and say I'm on the other side, you know, and the Antichrist side, and God's going to deal with that anyway. So you're going to see a lot of reformation in the Christian church because people are going to have to actually decide if they really are a Christian or if they're just you warmers.
Correct. And I agree with what you're saying. And I guess I'm kind of putting what's happening inside the church with what's happening outside the church with the volatile talk, the line in the sand. If you're not with me, you're against me. I mean, it's going to get brought into the church, and we're seeing a very violent left who's willing to use violence to get their way and bully. And it's only a matter of time before they start really, truly, not just verbally attacking or spiritually attacking, but actually physically attacking a church, which then you'll see the blowback. And that's where I'm kind of going with the whole Civil War thing. Is it boiling to that point where, or about to go to that point, or will it go to that point of at a church level that we, like I said, going back to the Middle Ages where it was a religious wars, or wars in the name of religion, I'm going to say, because I don't think it was very religious wars, but I think that was a,
well, I think
was a
you
war.
May see some of that in certain places. As far as, you know, every church in America having this problem, I doubt it. But I'm, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if it happened in Chicago, you know, and other super liberal areas where, you are literally hated if you are a traditional Christian, you know, with conservative, you know, biblical views. But here I will say this. If somebody would come into our church with that, no, because a lot of people in our church are packing. And you wouldn't have a chance. So.
Well, that's kind of where I'm going with it. It's kind of like the Fort Sumter thing. You know, the first shot has to be fired somewhere. So if it starts in one spot, usually you'll get a bunch of people from another area who will come over to help defend. We saw that in Kyle Rittenhouser going from Chicago up to Kenosha, Wisconsin, to help defend the businesses up there. And then that's how things start growing almost organically from there. That would actually cause, you know, a bigger escalated type of event. Now, I mean, obviously today's society is way different than the Middle Ages, where, you know, we're more standoffish and we're afraid of confrontation. So, you know, to see every person packing and every person carrying a gun and going to war over this issue, I don't see it. But on a scale of today, you know, yeah, right now we're kind of in the middle mini Civil War, but it's more press related versus what I see coming down the road, which will be actually taking up guns and actually having physical altercations.
Well, to what purpose, though?
Any smart church,
yeah,
in any pastor who is hearing from the word, the Spirit of God right now, should have already gotten a security team in place, because it's their job to protect the congregants, and it's not a show. You know, here, come here, let me put on a show for you and let you be mesmerized by my words for an hour. This is about getting what God's heart is and what his thoughts are out to the people on the current trend of the day, of whatever is an issue, what the people need to know through the God's perspective. But your job as a pastor is to protect your people. You are the shepherd of the flock. And if you are a pastor and you are hearing my voice and you do not have a security team from within your congregation of men who are trained to look out for certain behaviors in people and to be ready with heat, you better be packing some heat, because all of your security people better be, because it is your job to watch those doors and to watch who's inside and to watch behaviors, because that you think the enemy is going to send somebody in, you know, with somebody with a T-shirt that says, I'm here to kill the congregation. No, they're going to sneak in. They're going to come in, or they're just going to wait until the service starts and then come try to blasting in through the doors. No, that, you know, you better be ready for that, because it's going to happen, because the closer Satan's time gets to getting shut down, and this returning to a nation of righteousness and around the world, as a matter of fact, you're going to see blowback. You're going to see the enemy, you know, start to kick up his heels big time, and you better be ready inside your churches. And people who think that that's not going to happen inside their little church are have their heads in the sand.
Well, I definitely agree. And, you know, I'll let you guys continue to talk about it, but I got to go earn my dollar for today. So you guys enjoy the rest of the show, and thank you for coming on early, Wendy.
You're welcome, Bill. Thanks for asking the questions.
Yeah, I was curious exactly what he was talking about. I wanted to explore this a little further in terms of a war. Was it a war of churches against government or against a particular political faction? That was where I was confused. Then we started talking about individual security in churches. Of course, my question is, and then I'll get to your theme. We can get to your stuff. And we have a little extra time. I think we can go into our next group for a bit as well. But if people are packing in your church, are they packing openly? You know, are you in a place where people can openly carry firearms and have that be not a problem in the church?
Well, you know, our church asks people to, you know, this is a constitutional carry state. So, you know, we don't need somebody's permission to carry our gun.
But the church is not objecting to that. I'm just curious.
No, but they do ask, you know, because we do have a large security team who are packing and who are trained, that, you know, if you are not a trained person on the team, to please leave your gun, you know, in the car or outside or whatever, just don't bring it to church, because we have a team who are constantly on the lookout. And we've had incidences in the last 2 months, you know, at about, you know, once a month, you know, somebody tries to come in. But that's taken care of quietly, and it's taken care of ahead of time. It never gets to the showdown thing, because this is just the day that we're living in, and you better understand
to go to your church.
The wiles of the enemy.
That sounds fascinating. I said, I want to go to your church. It's a bit of a drive, I think.
It'd
be worth it early Sunday morning.
More than welcome to come anytime.
Yeah, yeah. I'll get the donuts and coffee along the way, and yeah. Well, let's get your theme. Here we go. Do you really want the truth? Do you have questions you can't ask in church? Welcome to the Oh My God Report. Wendy Arthur is more concerned with truth than propaganda, putting more value in scripture than religion, and more about you and your relationship with God than your membership in any church. This is Christianity with a Kick. Now that you're already here, please continue.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I just had some stuff I wanted to throw out there today, because it's important. Just like pastor's job is to, you know, protect the congregants and to get, you know, the what's on God's heart out to them. I'm feeling in my spirit today that I need to kind of warn not warn, but, you know, just let people know some of the things that are going to be coming down the pike and not be afraid, because fear makes people do stupid things.
Mass psychosis makes entire nations do stupid things. So, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, 365 times in the scriptures, God says either do not fear or be not afraid.
Hmm.
So that's like a daily reminder.
I mean, that was no coincidence, the number of times. That's quite fascinating.
Yes. And fear is something that God abhors. He doesn't want his people in fear at all. He's, matter of fact, he even mentions timidity, you know, a very timid spirit, a cowardly spirit will get you in hot water in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. He wants bold as lion people because he is bold as a lion, because he is the lion of the tribe of Judah. So, and we are supposed to look like our father. So we are not to be afraid, and no matter what we see, he says, we do not walk by sight. We walk by faith. So, and it's something that is on my heart to let people know. And now there are certain things that you need to do that are wise. Just he says, look at the ants. They toil in the summer to prepare for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's preparation is not a bad thing. So, but do I think you need to go build a bomb shelter? No. People should be considering right now, as the U.S. dollar is going to crash, it's already in a spiral downward. Get some gold and silver, you know, even if it's just, you know, a little bit, whatever you can afford, because right now silver is way down. And that, by the way, is a big manipulation by the elites, because, you know, anytime you see, you know, the stock market go up and down and all that kind of stuff, it's calculated and it is pre-planned, you know, for their purposes. It's not for our benefit, it's for theirs. So get some gold and silver, because that is going to be holding people over for a little bit until, you know, things turn around. And I've said it again before, and I'll say it again now, that by December, you know, those who are on the side of right and good will be rejoicing. But in the meantime, there's going to be some dark periods, and the economy crashing is going to be one of them. So just be prepared. You don't have to live in fear. It's not forever. It's for a short time. But so just know it's for a short time. Yes, it's going to be a lot of inconvenience. It's going to be a lot of frustration. But don't be afraid, because this has to happen for God's reset to happen. Forget about their great, you know, reset. You know, God's going to reset it. And it's going to – he needs all of this to happen so that things – the Babylonian system is what God calls it – the world system of everything's ruled by money and power and all that kind of stuff. Well, that's fixing to come down, but it's got to be shaken to its core. So it's going to look bad, but it's for our good. So just remember that, okay? All these things that you see coming down the pike are for our good, because it's got to go. It's going to get rid of the crud that God wants to weed out, and he will weed it out. You know, have some extra food in the pantry. I don't mean go buy out Sam's. Just have some extra food that, you know, that'll get you through a few months. Because this supply chain problem is a real thing, and that is also calculated. There is plenty here in America, but they're trying to make it a problem and get us in fear so that they can do the controlling thing again. Because if you control the food and if you control the money, you control the people. And it's time for us to stand up and say, not happening in my house. And it comes down to this. Everyone is responsible for themselves. Those who think that the government is going to come in and ride in on a white horse and save everybody is out of their minds. That is not going to happen. You know, right now, this current fraudulent, illegal government is not our friend. They are our enemy. So be prepared for your own house. Take care of you and yours. And hopefully have enough to help a neighbor who wasn't smart enough to plan ahead like you. Yeah. So I just want to throw that
Well, a lot of people don't have money to plan ahead, too. That's another problem is that, you know, the economic situation is such that folks are, you know, the paycheck to paycheck. They may not be able to. I think a lot of people would love to be able to do that, love to have the time to start a garden, love to have the time to – or love to have the money to go, you know, get a decent amount of canned goods. I mean, you don't have to go a full, you know, my prepper patriot, you know, food stores, 25 years of stuff. But it's just, you know, just start buying, you know, an extra can or two a week, and pretty soon you'll have some extra
That's
food.
Right.
Anyway, yeah.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And yeah, you don't have time for a garden. But I would suggest finding out where your church food pantries are.
Yep.
And asking.
Exploding right now. People are going crazy with food banks because they simply, the economy is so bad. Credit card charges are up. Bankruptcies, repossessions of cars is huge right now. You know, you don't see it because it's on an individual basis and it's not being reported greatly. You know, people are more concerned that Nancy Pelosi's plane, you know, takes off from Taiwan on time than what's actually happening. But there's a lot of stuff happening under the radar, as they say. Bianca's got back here, and I got a couple of questions that I thought of as you were talking. Bianca, you want to jump in here?
That's good advice that one of you gave. Good morning. That the members of the church have to be protected, and they need to arm themselves because what you just got through talking about. You know, you had a case in Nashville where you had a member. This happened to be a black person. It goes to all white church several weeks. And then one week he started opening up fire and killing people. And that church, the members of that church did not do what they were supposed to do in order to protect the church and get out of this notion of looking at someone and having been conditioned emotionally to look at them as being someone sorrowful and that, well, they may turn out to be someone who's there to kill you. And I mean, that's just what happened in this case. So, and you know, one thing I don't understand, why come preachers don't read the word of God for what it is and forever trying to interpret it to fit a certain situation or narrative for their benefit? The word of God is clear. It's perfectly clear, just like the Constitution. What's the problem?
Well, the problem is, if you're going to get real about it, it's a fear of man. They are more afraid of what the general populace is going to think about them than what God thinks. And when that happens, you don't belong in the pulpit no more. You are not qualified and worthy to be preaching the Word of God and to be speaking for the Word of God.
Well, I agree with you. You see much of this sort of thing going on. I've seen some preachers of some very large congregation that come out and they're supportive of gay marriage. And I don't understand.
Yep.
You're
not going to see them in the pulpit much longer. Because like I said, God's cleaning house. And over the next several months, you are going to see some major headlines and some things you'll never see because they're smaller communities and you know they're not going to be in national news. But God's going to remove them anyway because you know he's coming back for a spotless bride. He says without spot or wrinkle, and that means business. That means you can't have that kind of thinking and literally hellish thinking in your life and on your agenda and think that you are going to be part of the bride of Christ. No, you come down, if it comes down to it and you have to make a choice. Literally some people have literally said, don't, and these were people who were serving the Lord for a long time. And then, you know, Satan whispers in their ear and they start thinking about the things that they're unhappy with. And this doesn't happen overnight, but this is when you can choose to walk away from Christ. You can, even after you have been quote unquote saved. Okay. Cause we are being saved, it says, but you can choose to walk away. But it is a calculated, pre-planned, well thought out thing that you have to do. It's not something that you have been wounded and you're hurt and you say something rash out of your mouth like I'm done with God. You know, that kind of, that's not it. This is a something you have chosen and made a heart decision to say that says, to hell with Jesus. I am not doing this. I am not a Christian, and I refuse to follow this anymore. That's when you have walked away. And as Scripture says, it is impossible for you to be restored. If you've done that, there is no hope for you. You will not be restored. Your time of forgiveness and repentance is over, and you don't get any more chances. And that is scary, people. It is scary. And these pastors...
And, you know, another thing, yes, I would say that the politics are the enemy of the church, because these politicians want to share the bully pulpit in order to deliver a message to the congregation for support of policies that go against the Word of God. And you just cannot do that. You have to pluck these people out of your house as if you was to pluck a thorn out of your eye. But preachers today, let them stay there. They let them have access to the ears of their congregation, of their flock, and they deliver these messages that are poisoning and cause you to act out in a way that you're not supposed to be acting out.
And I've seen that over and over in my life, you know, growing up and coming up in the different churches and denominations. But here's the thing. It's the God's dealing with the leaders right now. He is dealing with leaders in politics. He's dealing with leaders in the church. And he's calling them out. And he's dealing with them. And it was prophesied, months ago, by several of the trusted prophets that, you know, you will see a lot of resignations of world leaders come about, and assassinations and deaths. And what are we seeing now? All kinds of resignations. These are not because they decided to retire. They're being forced out by their companies. Look at the, you know, CEO of Twitter, Zuckerberg's fixing to go down. And he's going to say that he's stepping down or retiring from Meta, you know, Facebook as we know it now. But it's not. He's being forced out. And
how?
God said I'm sorry, I've got a grandchild here making noise.
Old enough to put him on the air. We've had young people on before. Now, how is it that Facebook, that Zuckerberg would be in a position to have to give up his Meta? Does that mean death or something? I forgot what that means.
In Hebrew, it means dead.
Okay, yeah. That's
so
perfect.
When he changed the name from Facebook to Meta, he basically prophesied over his own company. But he's going to be called out on several areas, by the way. But God said he himself is going to force Zuckerberg out. And how God does that, I don't know. You know, whether it's a rise up in the company, a mutiny, I have no idea how God's going to do it, but he's going to do it. And it's going to come soon. So just watch for that. And you can say,
so this is all prophecy,
wow,
right? This is,
yeah, that's a prophecy.
Somebody and, said this, put this down somewhere. This is all a documented schedule that you're talking about here, you know, through December.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So but just hold on, because it's going to get crazy. It's going to be one wild ride.
It's already crazy.
Here in December.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you ain't seen nothing yet.
As they say. Yeah. Well, here's something, you know, it's fascinating. Think about this. And like I said, I don't want to talk about this from an arrogant perspective, but, you know, people, their extremes are bullets and ballots. That's it. And those are the only things people think about. And we at Action Radio, and I just had two interviews this week, which are fabulous. I got two hosts that knew virtually nothing about Action Radio when we started. And by the end, they're already writing a bill. You know, I mean, so the conversion was so fast. Not only have they want to start,
great?
You know, it's amazing. Not only do they want to be advocates for bills, they've got, and one wants to redo the pandemic mandates. Another one wants to, I've got them down here, but, and this is within an hour. Okay. So what I'm saying is that, there's a lot of other things going on, and I don't know what God's place is for Action Radio, but he wouldn't have, you know, forced everything else out of my life to, you know, steer me here as a last resort without an intended purpose. And the fact that so many people are coming to this, and so many people, you know, this is a way, this may be God's way. I mean, again, I don't want to be arrogant and think that this, you know, God says, okay, Action Radio's got God, you know, pushing us all the way here. But when you think about it, you know, this is an option that's never been considered. It's never been tried. We're at a time where the first time time in our history. We have a stolen government. We have a coup, something we only thought happened in third world dictatorships. Well, now we have a first world dictatorship, us, you know, and so this is a lot of this stuff is new, but people are still open to something that's totally different, never been tried. And now they want to do it. And so I'm always hopeful. I'm always, optimistic that we can, you talk about the government, the economy crashing. We have a bill that may catch on very quickly once we get our national exposure that takes away the power of Congress to borrow money. Well, that would forestall that completely. That would reverse our economic problems and put us in a position where the economy wouldn't collapse. So there's some variables in here that, will it pass?
Well, there's going to be a lot of variables in here. And I think Action Radio is positioned right now to, if you just tune into what God is wanting to do, because in the coming months and years, you're mm-hmm. going to see even more major things that we thought could never happen. Matter of fact, one of the recent prophecies by several of the prophets, and by the way, they don't ever listen to the news. Just want you to know, God does not allow them to listen to the news because he doesn't want them influenced by anything but the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. They have teams of people who let them know when something the Lord has said through them is going to happen actually happens. That's the only time they find out about what's going on in the news. yes, and I think that's a great idea. But anyway, he was saying, God just recently was talking about that we will be in literally shocked at how far back, how many years, as in the hundreds of years to the formation of our country, that certain things were not his plan, were never his plan, and that our forms of bondage and slavery that he's going to get rid of, the IRS being one of them. He said never to happen.
Well, it was never intended. A lot of things were never intended. We were never intended to be a democracy. We were never the Senate was supposed to be elected by the state representatives, so the state had representation in the federal government. The Supreme Court was never supposed to have judicial review. There's tons of things.
Right.
That we were never supposed to have a Federal Reserve. That wasn't in the plan. You know, we were never supposed
to
have an income tax.
Right.
You know, so all these things. So a lot of the work I try to do here is to get, you know, the government back into constitutional compliance. We're never supposed to have a National Firearms Act or a 68 Gun Control Act. There's a bunch of things. But I want to, in the time we have left, I want to ask you a big question. This is my impossible question for today. When God created us, I always have to do this at least once a week to Wendy. When God created us, he incorporated fear into our being. So the question is, if God says that we should not be afraid, the 365 warnings to not be afraid, a different daily warning, what place did fear have in our creation, and what does it have in our life, in God's purpose for fear itself?
That is, this goes back to we are a three-part being.
Okay.
We are a spirit, we have a body, and we have a soul and we live in a body. There you go. And so part of fear is part of emotion, which is part of the soul. Soul is mind, will, and emotions. And we are, because we are emotional beings, it's part of our makeup to be ruling over the soul. That's the proper, it should be spirit. That's why he says it in Thessalonians, spirit, soul, body. In that order is how we are to have things in control of ourselves.
Okay.
And so the Spirit of God in us is to be controlling, is to control the soul controls the body.
Okay.
And that, or so when the soul is in subjection to the Spirit, things work out just fine. But when your soul rules, when your emotions rule, nothing will turn out well, because emotions are all over the place. And like we had spoken earlier, fear is an emotion. And when you act out of fear, you do stupid things. So, and then you pay a high price later. So you, that all of our emotions, including fear, have to be in subjection to the Spirit. And it's a good thing to be afraid of a grizzly bear.
I was going to say there's a purpose for it. I can see self-defense and a primal survival instinct. But the fear that we have is at multiple layers above that. That's where the problems come in.
And,
okay.
Right. And we are not to give in to the soul. Okay. The soul is to be ruled by the spirit, which is by the spirit of God. And there is no fear in that. But I hope I'm getting that across. If I'm not explaining that well enough, just, you know, kind of letting me know.
Well.
And okay. So,
that's the question. Yeah. Another question, and we've got Lindsay and Paige on the line. We're at Chancey's out today for our what I'm now calling the wild women of wellness. I just made that up this morning. So let's see if they like that. I think I called you the God babe at one point in one of our messages. So, you know, it's just
on the issue of fear.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
On the issue of fear, you're supposed to love God with all your heart and all your soul. And doing that, you believe in the words that he says. And if you believe in the words that he says, and if you love with all your heart and all your soul, you would be fearful to go against those words. Because the repercussion and the punishment is quite evident. He has told you.
And that's true. It's a reverential fear of the Lord, because you know how holy he is. You understand. Well, nobody's ever going to know how holy he is until they stand before him on Judgment Day. Then they're going to go, oh, man, I wish I'd known. But
we told you. You know, I can just see Wendy up there, you know, beside
you.
God, you know, and be like, well, I told you, you know, weren't you listening? I'm going to give Paige and Lee a chance to ask you a question too, but there's something I was thinking of also as we were talking, and you're talking about the churches define God. To me, pastors, ministers, priests, they're really followers of God. I think the mistake they have is when they think they're leaders. And they sort of take over their own little leadership and interpretation, as Bianchi was mentioning earlier. Do you think that they lose their perspective as maybe as leading the congregation, but still followers of God, and they sort of lose their place and perspective by losing that belief that they are in fact followers?
Well, Indeed. Yes, and that's kind of a multifaceted statement and question, because church as we know it today is not how God set it up.
Okay.
It was never meant to be one person up front, all eyes on you. When Jesus came and he was setting up, churches were not in synagogues, because that was Jewish synagogues. Jesus came and incorporated faith for the Gentiles and everybody else. So they met in homes. They were home churches. And it says everyone was expected to come.
This is great.
And everyone was expected to come with something to contribute. It wasn't just one person with a message. Everyone was expected to come with something.
Next week, I want to talk about the way that God set up churches and religion the way they're supposed to be. That is a fabulous topic. Paige.
Okay.
Paige Ward, do you have a question for Wendy before we get to the wild woman of wellness, which is hard to say, by the way?
Hi, Greg. I do not have a question. I can't. I wasn't listening to the whole conversation.
Oh, that's okay.
So
I always give you the opportunity.
Left field.
Okay.
Good morning, Paige.
Good morning, Wendy.
Well, y'all be blessed in your report today, and bring wellness. Bring it on.
Okay. We'll give Lindsay a chance next week then. All right. Thanks, Wendy. Oh, wait a minute. We need contact information.
You can contact me on Facebook. You can go to Art by Wendy Arthur. You can go to Wendy Arthur, or you can go to Dimensions Ministry.
That's good. Lindsay, do you have a quick question? I don't want to miss this opportunity.
No, I'm very interested in listening in the next week, so that sounds like a fabulous topic.
Well, what you folks can do is, because Wendy comes on at 7:30, you don't have to call in, but if you want to just listen in, and then when you call in, you may have, or you can even call in during her report. I mean, we're one big happy family here, so that would work too. Okay. Thanks, Wendy.
All right. We'll see y'all next week.
Sounds good. All right, so I still have Chancey's theme, but I have to add you guys to it. I'll probably make a new one. This one runs a little bit long, but it gets the message across. What is health? What does it take to stay healthy? We have a longer lifespan than 100 years ago, but is the quality of life any better? 100 years ago, their food was better. They got more exercise. They weren't as fat. They didn't have preservatives, antidepressants, sugar in everything, and they didn't have vaccines. If you talk about alternative healthcare, people think of crystals, incense, strange candles, crystal balls, Ouija boards, notions, potions, lotions, and total hippies telling you to detox, man. So let's change our system of sick care into wellness. Let's get healthy. Let's lower our stress, stop taking in poisons, eat and drink organic, clean food, and let's have a chat with Chancey Terry, because this is Wine, Weed, and Wellness Wednesday. And joining this amazing group here, Paige Ward and Lindsay Horton. And so I'm just going to see if I can add your names onto that. Sometimes when you make these productions, my production thing, my Adobe Audition program, once you do the amplitude and compression and some of the other things you do before you release one of these things, they kind of lose the original with the separate tracks. So I'll see what I can do to play with that. Or I'll just make a new one. So who wants to go first? What's going on? What's new health news this week? Okay. Silence. Fine. Do I call on you? Is this like classroom? But why do I always see the same hands? Is it one of those moments?
No.
Okay.
This week I spent a lot of time with people I work with at my other job, and I found that a highlight that I was seeing was fear of failure. And it's really holding a lot of people down.
Okay.
What I found was, so I follow God, and I'm a huge believer in God. I think that God is love and light. I think that everybody has a core value belief, and I think if they were honest with themselves, it comes back to a source or AKA God. I had a conversation with a man the other day, and he told me no. He said, no, when you die, your body goes 6 feet under, your body decomposes, and that's it. There is no energy that lives on. There is no spirit that reincarnates. There is no heaven. There is no hell. It is what we experience here, and it's as good as it can be, as we allow it to be, or as bad as we allow it to be. And that really, it didn't hurt my soul, but it made me realize that people are still in a very low state of mind. There's a lack of hope in this planet, and I really wanted to hit on that today and discuss how come there's still people who think that this existence, this lifetime is all there is for us, and there's nothing beyond that. So I just thought that might be an interesting topic for Paige
huge.
And I.
It's absolutely huge, and you mentioned some really great points, and I'm sure Paige and Pianca too can pick up on it. Anybody else wants to join us, you can also type in live chat too. We have a worldwide live chat, and just call 215-383-3832. I want to do the failure thing after this, but what you mentioned this person was talking about, that there's no life beyond this. You know, you're dead and buried and, you know, worm food. That is so pessimistic. And I think when I first realized I was going to die at the age of like 9, you know, I was like scared to death. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be bones, you know, in the ground. And I thought, well, is that me? And I thought, no, that's bones in the ground. Okay. So once you realize that as Wendy was saying, that we are a multi-part entities. Yeah, we're water, carbon, you know, a few other chemicals, things like that. But we also have a spirit, and that spirit, you know, for the person that says that you're dead and buried, your body might, but you have a spirit. And if they think that the spirit dies, how did they think it was created in the first place? That'd be the question I'd ask. So why do you have a spirit now? Where did that come from? And why would you think that would be do you think your spirit stays underground with you and dies with you? That doesn't make any sense. And I've seen too many things in the spiritual world. I've seen too many, you know, from ghosts and everything else to know that we're not it. There are multi-dimensions that we do not perceive. That's why we have God, you know, and the faith in God is the faith in trying to, is like accepting something that we can't possibly understand yet, you know, maybe someday, but it's just incredibly pessimistic. And I think if you don't have God, if you don't have a belief in your spirit as a separate entity beyond your body, it was there before your body, it's going to be there after your body, then death is a very scary thing. But once you realize there is a God, you have a spirit, and your spirit's going to go on wherever our spirits go, I'm curious, but then you don't fear death. Then it becomes, how much can I accomplish here in this world with the time I have available that God's going to give me? But that's an entirely different question.
Yes, it is. And I think people have to understand, too, that scientifically we're 90% energy. We're 90% an energy field and 5% physical particle. So when when we're created, energy can't be destroyed, nor can it be created, but it can be manipulated. So if you think about that, we're all just a bunch of energy, bags of energy, walking around in creation of this human body. So when you die, to say that your body goes 6 feet under and that's all, well, that's just incorrect, because when you die, your energy is released, aka your soul, your spirit. And when that happens, the essence of you still remains on this earth. Now, I'm not God, so I don't know what happens on that level with our soul, like our thoughts, our emotions. But I do know that I was blessed and given the ability to be able to see past souls. So when I see somebody, the essence of a person who had significant influence on another human being follows them. Now, do I know if that's their soul, like what they tend to look like they did here on their physical plane of earth? But on another perspective, I have also noticed that the things that I'm able to see are things that mean something to the person I'm talking to. So I know that energy remains with us. I know that it doesn't just die with our bodies, but I'm not sure how it's created, and I'm not sure why the essence of the energy remains with the humans that person had an influence on here on Earth. But I think Paige might have a little bit more.
Yeah, I want to get Paige in here too, but I got one quick question for you first, though, and that is, have they measured the energy or the electrical field? Have they gauged how much, energy we're actually putting out there?
I see it for 3 to 6 feet around people, and I know that that's really generic to say, but to be honest with you, it's within people's energy fields that I see these things. So I think we hold it within ourselves. I'm just not sure how it gets there.
But I'm just wondering if we have measurable energy, like a current, like an electric eel, literally, radiates electricity.
I would imagine. Paige, do you know?
Doctors like Dr. Joe Dispenza are studying those topics right now. Like, they're bridging Dr. Greg Braden, Dr. Joe Dispenza. There's another doctor, too. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But they're showing that where science and spirit meets within the unseen realm. And it's funny, too, because, like, Lindsay, as a medium, like, she is able to, like, see more earthly spirits around people. And not that I can't, but, like, I work with the Akash. And so the Akash is like the living library of everything your soul's ever experienced. And so, like, I mean, for me, my perception is that, like, there is more than the earth on a physical level as well. Like, there's other planets and systems that are working with us to support us through these transitions that we're having. And so the guides that I work with, they're called the Pinnacle, and they're like the keepers of our soul's records here. And so, like, they make sure that they don't get into the wrong hands, because, like Lindsay's saying, like, if your soul isn't present, and if you don't if you don't have a faith, then you don't really fully get to live this experience. And so there are a lot of people that aren't supposed to know their soul in this timeline. And so, like, and nothing against them, they're keeping the balance, because the earth is this place of polarity. And so with them keeping the balance, they don't need to have the information about Greg's soul over the last 10,000 years, you know?
Okay. But, yeah, so interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. When you talk about polarity, it's interesting. I was just thinking, my mind goes, the ADHD brain is a fascinating thing. I was thinking of, like, migrating geese using the electrical poles of the earth. I mean, they actually navigate by magnetism, from what I've heard. And so there is a connection, and I think we lose that, and I think you should be able to get back. I mean, why do certain people have a sense of direction and others don't? What are we tuning into? And we're tuning into the physical world, the sun, the rotation, the magnetic poles of the earth, all the things that we have, the senses, that we have to tell all kinds of things about the earth. Certain people can smell rain coming a day away. Others can't. They're more in tune, with the natural world. And the further you get from our spiritual natural world, the more probably you're going to increase the sense of fear that Wendy was talking about in the previous half hour.
Right. I think some people like to call that their instinct. Humans seem to need need a rational term. They need rational explanation as to why things happen. They can't just say what Paige just said, that polarity and magnetism is involved in it. But I think you gave a great example because the migration of the birds every year, that is a physical example that an energy pull is in existence currently. They are pulled in that direction from an unseen source of energy. So that right there, in a nutshell, shows you that energy is very present on this planet, and it does have a very effective influence on our overall day-to-day actions and where we decide to go in life. It's just in a different way. It's more of we have the capacity of using our mind, our intellect, and choice based on emotion and desire, whereas animals have a more primal instinct where theirs is based on survival. We get to choose things that make us satisfied in life. They get to choose things that keep them alive in life.
Well, let me ask you a question. Go ahead, Paige. Then I got a question for Lindsay.
Yeah, I agree with Lindsay wholeheartedly. And I think that that is like some of that duality and polarity is that there are still so many humans that are trapped in their lower chakra system. What do I mean by that is like the fear and the, you know, the sexuality and the power grip. And so like, spirituality and faith and God and all of these topics are meant to bring us up into the higher chakra points, which is the heart, which is about love and compassion and communication in the throat and like seeing clearly, seeing things for what they really are and not, you know, the sheep and the lion kind of vibe, you know? And so, I mean, there are still so many people that are in that animalistic nature and it shows. And then it's like, we think of like the influence of the government in some way, shape, or form, right? Regardless, there's influence there. And so it's like...
And that's fear.
Like the whole, like, yeah,
government is
exactly.
Fear.
And the fear,
yeah,
the fear then drives people to be more animalistic.
Which is in our lower chakra form. Our lower chakras is all about our ego, our foundation, our sexuality, stuff like that. We hold that in our lower chakras, whereas what we should be wanting to do is push ourselves in a healthy way up through those into our upper heart where we can learn that love, compassion, our throat, where we can verbally voice that in a way that it connects with people in an unbiased way. And then our third eye, which allows us to use our intuition and to perceive people, make us understand whether or not they're ready to receive this and on what level. And then your crown allows you to be open-minded and receive things on a higher level, which is where me, Paige, and Chansey all are, is we understand there's more than what we can physically see. But if you are fear, if you're in fear, you're going to constantly be trying to reach that approval level on this planet where it's, oh, I need to have a good job. I need to have insurance. I need to have benefits, a retirement plan. I need to have these nice things. That's all in your lower chakra field. That's where your foundation's being built, your ego's being held, stuff like that. When we learn to get out of that and not worry about other people's perceptions of us, that's when we can reach those higher points, receive compassion and empathy, and help other people feel better and not be searching for approval from others.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
That's,
I
think Bianca wants to get in too. Go ahead, Paige. Paige, what was that?
I just had the craziest deja vu. Like, I swear we've done this before.
Done what before? This conversation?
This conversation.
When?
I don't know, but it felt too real.
Okay. Well, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, we talk about government stuff all the time and the fact that the government people want control, which to me makes them the most fearful people of all. They're so afraid that they can't even control themselves. They're so terrified they feel the need to control everybody else just so they will feel safe. And they feel safe through control. So they're the most fearful people of all, which is crazy. Pianki, you had a comment, and then I get... All right, go ahead, Paige. Yeah, I'm sorry. Paige?
No, go ahead, Greg. I was just agreeing with you. I said lack of heart.
There we go. Well, I want to do a full analysis of the entire chakra system bit by bit, week by week, until because I think it'd be fascinating for people to understand. Pianki, you've been waiting patiently, sir.
Yeah, that whole concept of the animalistic is being is demonstrated with that great monument on the eastern side of the Great Pyramid there on the Giza Plateau. They have this gnome at the Sphinx, Its actual name is Harem Akhet, a Heru on the horizon. It's a monument of a lion with a head of a human being. And basically what it's showing is that your higher spirituality, your higher rising, will place you ahead of the beast. And it does
yes.
a very good indication of that. That's basically what it's all about, is that you as human beings, and if you are in tune with, see, resurrection is a spiritual resurrection, not more so a physical resurrection. It's about the spiritual resurrection in you that brings you into the knowledge, the light.
Agreed.
Hmm. I got a question for you all. Speaking of animals, my experience with animals is that it's not that they want to, you know, act in very simple life. You know, it's like food, reproduction, you know, poop. their lives look very simple to us. I think if animals had a choice, if they have whatever it takes to build a society, you look at ants build very complex societies on the ground. You look at wolves have a very, very complex social order. I think animals are much more intelligent than we give them credit for. And I see intelligence in animals all the time. You look at, you know, your faithful dog. Well, that's an emotion. That's a connection. That dog has achieved something that's a fairly high level of intelligence. My feeling is that animals, if given the choice, you know, dolphins are highly intelligent. You know, if they had the choice to not swim with sharks, they would. But that's where the prey happens to be that keeps them alive. You know, they're animals, I think, that they're forced by a lack of choice, by the fact that they don't have a thumb. They don't have the brain that makes the social order to build things and connect things. You know, I've said that if the deer could build rifle, they'd be hunting us, you know, just to preserve themselves. You know, so if you look at animals, I think of them, I see them as missing something that forces them in the position they're in to be basically survival. They don't have refrigerators. They can't store food, you know, but chipmunks do.
Yeah.
You know, they found a way to store food. The birds that use tools, you know, to get worms out of trees. So I think there's something in the animal world however the creation went, that puts animals in a position where they are forced to only deal with, you know, food, reproduction, shelter, you know, that's it. You know, but I think there's something more to them. If they had a choice, they might live at a much higher level. How's that for a thought?
Yeah, I love that. And what's interesting to me is, like, we're highly sensitive, right? Or else we wouldn't be aware of the things we're aware of. And so, like, being mm-hmm. super connected to my animals, I think besides not having opposable thumbs, it's like they don't have a throat chakra. They can't communicate in language like we can.
Dolphins do.
So, yeah.
They have a whole sound language.
If you look at energy sense of an animal, there's no throat chakra. The parrot has one, but, I mean, they repeat things, right? So it's like...
mm-hmm.
Well, parrots are incredibly smart. I've kept birds for a long time, and you know, when I was younger, and you would have seen intelligence. I mean, they're extremely intelligent. Yeah, they can't verbalize and speak a spoken language, but you know, they're funny, and they think they're funny. Haven't you ever had an animal, you know, like a cat that thinks it's funny, and sits on your newspaper and smiles at you? You don't. That's more than just basic survival instinct. The animals have a sense of humor. That's one of the highest forms of intelligence. You know, an animal that thinks it's funny, it's hysterical to watch. Especially a parrot.
And then we give them consciousness. So. Like us giving them love shifts their energy body. So like if there's a wild stray that's lived out on the street its whole life, it's not going to have the same emotional intelligence as that dog that you've had since it was 6 weeks old that you've been sharing love with. So
that dog, your pet can't survive on the street either. Your pet's not going to survive on the street either, whereas the street dog would. So two totally different sets of intelligence, huh?
Yes, nurture versus nature, and that's a great example. But what you also need to understand is, Paige has a very good point, is maybe the parrot can verbally communicate a little bit, but a lot of the issue is that the human race hasn't learned how to understand these other things that we don't consider as the same, as equal to us. Like, you know, the man who created the polygraph, he hooked that polygraph up to the plants and trees on his own property and found that plants emit emotion
They just mm-hmm. don't know how to communicate it with us, and we don't know how to perceive it from them. A great example is there's certain trees that when it's about to rain or bad weather's about to come, they turn their leaves. Well, if you don't know that, then you wouldn't know that that's that tree saying to nature, everything around it, hey, it's about to rain. Let's turn ourselves in. Let's protect ourselves, collect as much as we can. We don't understand that level. We don't understand that underneath the tree, the root systems are all connected to everything around them, and they're mm-hmm. communicating that way. And that's a whole communication that the human mind can't understand. We can't grasp. Mother Nature cannot grasp what we're doing. They just think like, oh, this, like the man in the experiment, he was trying to get emotion out of his plant. So he thought to himself and out loud, I'll just try to take a lighter to it and set it on fire. And when he approached it with that lighter, that plant had an immediate reaction that measured off the scale of the polygraph machine. So all species have a language. It might not mm-hmm. be as broad as the human language. We just don't know how to understand it to allow it to influence us and to have a conversation.
Yeah, I think more lack of understanding than I think they have the. There's, I think, animals and plants are far more complex than we ever give them credit for. Panky, please go ahead.
Yeah.
You know, in West Africa, I've ran across plants that you take your finger and go to touch it. It's shy away from you. It would actually move away from you. Don't want you to touch it. And then in the coconut groves is a long row of coconut trees. It may stretch a quarter of a mile. At one end, a disease would develop where the leaves start turning brown. And the disease will move down the grove. But at some point, it stops. Why does it stop? Because the diseased trees have sent messages ahead of the disease for them to produce an immunity to what's coming trying to destroy them.
Yes,
that is
distributed through the root system.
No, that's fascinating.
I think that's one of my favorite parts. Like, we're talking wellness and plants, and that's one of my favorite parts about plant medicine. And how the movement is rising and shifting in regards to plant medicine, because not only does it help with our original topic of like accepting death and honoring it and seeing it as not a death, but, you know, your next evolution, but it also helps in understanding the communications of the planet and tapping back in to that root chakra, but in a more aligned, higher way, because your root is literally like your roots, like you being in your body and feeling safe on the planet. And so like you're able to do that from a higher consciousness. And so like for me, like psilocybin mushrooms and ayahuasca and all of these medicines that help raise your consciousness while still simultaneously being able to be present in your physical form. And I'm not saying as a party drug or something like that. I'm meaning ceremonially in reverence for the planet, for your soul, for such a time.
Like peyote,
and,
for example?
Like peyote, exactly. I haven't sat with peyote, but exactly. I mean, the indigenous cultures are so much more tapped into those subtle realms than the masses of society. And we'll say specifically big cities. We'll go there. Mm-hmm. You know, like most of those people are so disconnected from the mm-hmm. earth.
yeah.
And
well, it's
so
interesting. Go ahead. I'm
in
sorry.
That lower energy center, you know, those lower chakras, but they're not actually grounded. And this is like, there's so much science behind that as well, but it's just, it's interesting to see, like, not only do the plants, like, give us oxygen, but they can also help us remember our soul's memories and gifts and accept the evolution of our reality.
So I don't like seeing trees cut down. It bothers me a lot. Chief Dan Skyhorse, the Creek tribe, Santa Rosa Creek, we had a conversation one day about how the Seminole can predict a hurricane by watching the grass. The grass will flip around. It'll change. It appears at a different angle. And I think the underside shows or something, but in the same way that you mentioned these other plants or trees can tell when the weather's getting bad. You know, Seminole know 24 or 40 hours ahead of time just based on what the grass does. And so the signs are there, but we've lost the ability to read them.
And I think it's important to take that as factual evidence that we are more than just our existence in this lifetime. There's too much going on around us to think that, oh, we're going to live for 80 years and then we just die and that's just it. I don't think that's it. I think that there is a place where we go next. And I think that if you do this life in a good way, a compassionate way, and you really try your best to be a positive influence, I think your blueprint will be left behind with your soul, and it'll help give a positive charge to everything around you.
Yeah. And like
there's no one ethnic group more spiritual than another. We all human beings on this planet. Now, are there some that's more knowledgeable and understanding of these sorts of things? Yes, that's in anything. Some people can make a better peach pie, apple pie, than others can. But I hear folks say that, well, that group there is more spiritual. No, human beings are human beings. And the ability for you to be able to do what can be described as a phenomenal is that you haven't been trained or experienced in it.
Yes, and they also, it's just rewritten in different ways. The Christianity has the 6 days of creation. The word created everything. Hinduism has its 6 aspects of Om. In Egypt, in Egyptians, we have the 6 aspects of the all-seeing eye of Horus. So it's the same thing, just rewritten in different ways for these different colonies of individuals to relate to and understand.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And it's interesting to me because, like, I mean, I've studied, like, I just completed my yoga teacher training, like, 2 months ago. And so, like, my, you know, westernized programming thought yoga was just about asana, which is the physical poses. But the point of yoga is to sit at the seat of the soul. Well, the practices that I was learning and the language that I was learning is 5,500 years old. And then, you know, and then we have like the Christianity Bible, which we'll say is like 2,000 years old, right? And so it's just this hilarious thing to me because it's all the same message leading back to the one truth, which is you are part of God. Like we are all each aspects connected to the one. And so like, you know, that whole topic of, you know, no one's more spiritual than somebody else. Exactly. Because the entire, like, Sunday isn't the day to think, oh, today I'm going to be spiritual because it's the Sabbath. It's like, no, every moment is meant to be lived as a moving prayer. Every single moment. And that's where the challenge comes in because the spiritual community has overcomplicated all of that. Religion has overcomplicated all of that. It was never meant to be so complicated. It was meant to be as simple as having reverence for your breath. Like, oh, my God, I have the ability to breathe? What a gift. And so I think that if I could, like, and I know Lindsay feels the same way, if we could, like, you know, everyone wants to separate each other right now, and that's the agenda. Let's separate them so that they don't want to, you know, connect with each other and see that actually if we all just drop the guard, drop the belief systems that what I believe is right and what you believe is wrong, we would actually see that everyone's pretty much, like, has the same story in a different form.
Yeah.
No, that makes perfect sense. I've never understood religions, and I disagree with Wendy on this, that why would God create, you know, the same almost rituals, beliefs, systems, you know, the number 6, the significance of this across different religions, and only have one go to heaven? That never made sense to me. I disagree with Wendy openly about that. I don't see it that way. I don't see a God that would do that, but I see the greatest separation, and this is what governments seem to do, is they want to separate us from our spiritual, from our God, from our religion, and they want to replace it with them, and that's the fear and the control things. And I want to talk about failure before we go from this hour because it's fascinating, but do you see it the same way I do, that this the people that are the most fearful, that are the most separated from God, that have the least investment in their soul and their energy and learning about themselves. Those are the folks that are that seek to control others, and the best place to control others is government. So you've got the most fearful, most dangerous people seeking the most power in government and usually getting it, unfortunately, and the most removed from God and their own spirit and their own soul. And then they're trying to do it to the rest of us.
Yes, and like the veils that are given to us that I learned about, like we're always, like when we talk about like where do we go, how does that happen, like it's like we're always going to have a veil. The veils were put here so that we could live this experience. And
what's
so
a veil?
Like what's happening, the veil between like what we see here and what is actually occurring beyond. And not that we don't have access within ourselves, but we're never going to fully just know exactly what happens when we transition. And so what's interesting to me about heaven and hell, right, is that there's two sides for, well, there's more than two, but the two sides that stick out to me the most is you can live in heaven or hell right now. And then the second side is that the Egyptian theory is that the god Anubis is the one, and it's the god Anubis, we'll think of that as an energy, not as a being. So that energy says that when you transition, wherever you believe you will go is where you're going to go first until you finally surrender to basically the will of God. And so people that think, oh, that have lived off suffering and guilt and, you know, condemnation, they will go to that version of what they think they're going to experience until they let go. And so a movie that I can recommend for all beings to watch, it's on Gaia. It's called Astral City. I believe that is the closest thing that we can see and know that it is the full representation of what happens when you transition. And it's Brazilian, so it's in Portuguese, but they finally translated it. So their mouth isn't saying what you're hearing. But
it's like an old martial arts movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Fight me.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So why Portugal? Why Brazil? Is there something going on there that we should know about? Well, see, you know, I see there's no coincidence. Well, think about this for a second. There's no coincidence. You look at Brazil right now. Brazil has one of the few independent presidents in the world. Brazil has a president that did not take the COVID jab. Brazil is a fascinating place right now. Of course, all the forces of evil, the government forces, are against them. There's a worldwide conformist movement of Dr. Fascists in every country forcing their governments to put mandates on people. You want to talk about control and if someone with no soul and no spirit whatsoever, I don't know where he's going to go, but I don't want to be there with him. You know, so it's it all goes to the same control thing. But there's certain places in the world. Go ahead.
There are a lot of evil influences, but I think the biggest mistake that we make is when we sit and we judge people on what they believe and what religion that they go towards. All we're told, not all we're told, but the main thing that we're told in Christianity and in other God-believing religions is look to Jesus, walk in Jesus's way. What was Jesus's way? Love, light, and compassion. So in my mind, if somebody tells me they're a Christian, they practice Hinduism, they're anything like that, to me, my main question is, what's your goal? What is the main, what are you trying to get to here? If it's love, light, and compassion, let's continue this conversation and see how we can work together to make it even easier to get to that point in our walk in this life. When I think about my religion, God and Jesus are together, but at the same time, Jesus is my physical example where God is my energetic spiritual alignment. Jesus is who I'm trying to be like while I'm here on this earth in hopes that I can bring other people to that level with me so that we have the chance to experience heaven on the next plane. That's what I don't like it when people sit there and their religion is, you know, just hell, like they try to scare you. If you don't believe this, then you're going to hell. If you say this, you're going to hell. Well, we're not perfect. We're all going to make mistakes. The goal is to get better, to get closer to the way Jesus was. How was Jesus able to walk around these villages of poverty and just disgustingness and show so much love and compassion by just his existence there that he changed everything about those communities. And I think that's what people need to be striving towards, is that level of love and compassion and understanding, as opposed to what's your belief system and how many people are involved in it.
Makes sense to me.
I'm someone who I follow Christed consciousness as well, not even Jesus the man. I mean, he is one of my main guides, but I, you know, have been baptized Methodist, Catholic. I've done everything just seeking to be of service in some way, shape, or form and find that connection to, like, what ultimately was my soul. And so for me, like, I don't believe in heaven or hell after this. I just don't. I think that it's here and now, and that's okay. Like, it's we all are meant to have different belief systems. I mean, there are dark dimensions and there are light dimensions. I've sat with a lot of plant medicine, especially ayahuasca, that has shown me, like, it's not about, like, good or bad. It's more so, like, what you choose in this timeline. And, you know, for me, like, on a personal level, this probably is my last lifetime here. I volunteered to be here because, you know, to basically evade that whole one world order thing they're trying to do, and, like, and to give new options for people to live in a harmonious planet, because there is so much beauty and gifts and heaven that is right here, right now. And humans have taken it way too serious, the power, the greed, the control, and it's not their fault. Every person that drops into this physical form forgets who they are. But the children that are being born right now, they haven't forgotten. They're coming in with soul memory and immediately. And no wonder they're having, you know, forcing these kids to have more vaccines than I did as a baby. So they're doing, like Greg said, doing everything from our inner knowing, like that inner connection to something greater than just me. And so my whole goal as, like, my life's mission is for people to be aligned with their soul while feeling safe on the planet, ultimately, because we all know that this is a blip. Like, to spirit, 1 month is nothing. They think that's hilarious that we think that's a long time.
Well, it can be, so, depending on what you're doing. If you're depressed, it's a long time.
No, but they still,
you know, if you've just won the lottery,
because,
it's very short. So, yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, and then, like, the privilege of even being able to, like, contemplate our consciousness on this radio show, you know, like, we're, like, over here getting to even talk about our beliefs. Like, there were timelines where if a woman was to talk about her beliefs, she'd be killed, you know? So it's like, we have already anchored into so much light and the balance has been restored on the planet. We're just having to face it. We're having to face it. And it's not fun, really. I'm not going to lie, but I'm here for it, and I'm so grateful to find people like Lindsay and Chansey and Greg in this timeline that are creating these new ways of being so that every human has the choice to live in heaven on earth.
See, that's a huge thing, and don't forget Pianchi, too. And we have Wendy earlier, and we have Josie, who calls in all the time. And this is the most amazing gathering of people. And Chansey, yeah, this is the most amazing gathering of people I've ever seen. And to think this, you know, I was talking about this on one of my interviews Monday. This started basically on a bike ride. You know, I'm having this dialogue in my brain about, you know, between talk radio, the fact is they only talk. And I said, what we really need is to take action. So what we should have is action radio. And just that short 20, 15 second, whatever it was, process in my brain has led to this, you know, 8 years later. And so new things open up, and this is such a contrast to what Lindsay was saying earlier about failure. You know, I can't tell you how many times I failed to get here, you know, but it doesn't matter, you know, because I learned and things changed and I adapted and I tried new paths. You know, it's like there's not one path. There might be 100 paths and they might be converging and crossing and you don't know where you're going to go. But I think failure is not the problem. I think fear of failure is the problem. And somehow people think that failure is a bad thing. To me, it's just a, you know, a daily occurrence. Okay, what's the next challenge? You know, and you just go through it. But I don't think of myself as a failure. I don't disconnect from failure. It's like a mistake or something, whatever happens. But even if this thing totally collapses, I've already changed lives, views, ideas. I got two talk show hosts, you know, that knew virtually nothing about Action Radio, and they're already working on their own bills. That's change, okay, in the course of an hour, you know, and they're going to get back to me and say, well, I want to have you back. I want to talk about this bill. You know, I want to have my name on a bill. This is incredible. I want to start, you know, sharing this with my audience. Yeah, that happened within an hour. So change is very possible. I see change. I see miracles every single day. Those are two miracles Monday. The fact that I had the interviews and the fact that I could talk to these people and the fact that they could, you know, embrace this totally new concept that fast and then want to pursue it with their own people. That's change.
I think you also have to realize that how you perceive failure is a big part of it. People are scared of failure because they think it's going to be the demise of their existence on this planet. Like, it almost is like a death to them. They have to grieve it. Mm-hmm. When in reality, if you allow yourself to fail on, so me believing in God, how I look at it is if I want to fulfill my purpose, if I feel as though I'm ready to take that walk into what I'm meant to do, he has to shake my life up. He has to make some things fall down and fall away and crumble so that he can allow other doors to open for me and these new people to come into my life. Because we have a complete existence going on that is our reality. So in order for us to shift that, we have to shed. And sometimes that hurts really bad and it's disappointing to us. But if you look at it in a different way, if you're like, oh, wow, there is a lot of chaos going on in my life right now. These things are not working out like I wanted them to work out. I wonder what's next. What does he have planned for me if it isn't this? Once you think of it that way, you can start getting excited about, okay, I'm ready for this failure to be over with so that I can see what's next. This isn't my demise. This isn't the end of me. This is just the next chapter of my life. So I think perception's a big part of it too.
Well, the folks that you talk to about failure, what do they consider it an end point in their life that once they have failed, they will always be a failure? Is it an event or is it an occurrence? Is it a learning experience or is it actually an end in itself? That's, I think, part of the problem. Go ahead.
It's almost like once you get comfortable in this, oh, everything's starting to go wrong in my life and I'm at this point and I haven't accomplished this, it becomes a way of thought and a way of action. And it's really hard for people to get out of that. And it's just once you help them divert their thought process into a hopeful way, then they're no longer as lonely because their mind can be busy with what's coming next. That's the problem with fear in general, is it paralyzes us and keeps us in this same routine and state until there's nothing else left.
Do you see fear in terms of internal versus external fear? We were talking about this earlier with Wendy. You know, when the saber-toothed tiger is bearing down on you, that's an external fear. I don't think it's the one that really bothers people. I mean, you can deal with that. You run, you hide, you do whatever it is, you escape. But the real fear is the internal fear. And I don't know what's fear of the unknown, fear of a lack of capability, fear of perception of failure with other people. It's the internal fears, I think, are the ones that drive people crazy.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But they don't. It's hard for them to want to get out of that. That's where it is. It's okay. Fear of failure is a really big thing. So people get really depressed, suicidal, you know, those types of things. It is so difficult to uproot their feet and their footing and transition them into a more positive mindset that has to be the main focus. It might be internal, it might be external, but regardless, our point is to get you out of that. Like, okay, is it because your grandfather died? Is it because you got in a car accident and, you know, you got paralyzed from the waist down? Is it because on the inside you don't know if heaven or hell is real versus is this all there is to life? Figure out that conflict and then let's get you out of it, because the longer you sit there and ponder in it, the more it's going to influence your spirit and what level and frequency that you're on.
Well, it has to lower your energy.
Yes, and it's like a moment of basically where, like, like a lot of us don't even realize our subconscious belief system. So we could have adopted a belief system from our parents that is that like fear of failure or even fear of success, right? Like, because failure is inevitable. You are going to fail. Like that is, that's part of it. That's part of even like entrepreneurship, not even like on a spiritual level. And so it's like,
yeah, no kidding.
You know, when those things come up, and they come up like, why is it coming up? Like, yeah, maybe it's me, but also like, you know, did I grow up in poverty? Did I grow up without a spiritual connection? Did I grow up being told that I could do anything I want? Or was I told children are to be seen and not heard? So, you know, that comes into play with things like that too, I believe, with the failure.
Yes.
Well, I grew up in a culture where children were seen but not heard. But also you got to recognize, of course, those that want to, that some ethnic groups, some people within them are cursed. They're cursed with intergenerational curses for something that their ancestors done to someone else. That is very much real.
I believe we meet those with cycles. I think, like, you know, I've talked about this before, about how my grandmother had went through certain things, and then my mother went through very similar things, and I myself now have went through very similar things. And I think that's a cycle giving me a chance to approach it in a different way and try to get us out of that. Mine would be I want to be successful in this life, and not because I want to be financially stable, it's because I want to be allowed and able to talk to people of all walks of life on this planet, be influenced by them and also influence them. And it's hard because those karmic cycles do come back around and they try to keep us, they try to hold us back from reaching our highest potential in this lifetime. So I'm trying to end that cycle and start this new one so that once my work is complete, my daughters can go off of what I've done and just keep going to our potential higher place.
Yes, and that's where, to me, like, Jesus comes in. Because, like, some of the, like, we get to have that option of being a generational rewriter, like taking a new lead and taking a new step. And so a lot of the work I do with people in my one-on-one, like, mentorships is like clearing curses, hexes, spells, occult black magic from old timelines through the power of Christed consciousness so that you are free from all those ancestral restraints. And so, like, I truly, when I started doing that work, my mind became quiet. My doorway started to open. I started to live a different existence compared to what my family did. And what was even better about that was my family started waking up because I freed us from those curses, hexes, spells, from old timelines. Because like what Greg said, if we live in this multidimensional reality, then those past timelines are still happening. And we can time travel from this now moment through our inner being into those timelines or even through the power of the word and rewrite the script.
But the problem is that people...
Go ahead, Lindsay.
People who haven't sat and spoke with the people that Paige, myself, and Chansey have sat with, they don't understand this. They can't grasp it. So that's when we bring the physical tools into play. That's when we start the sound therapy, the art therapy, the ceremonial experiences where we get these one-on-one times with people and we let them feel this and experience it physically so that they can start to understand that, hey, we can change the ways that we're thinking. We can change our thought process. We can give ourselves more confidence just by being aware that there's more than our current state of existence. There's more than the depression I'm going through right now. There is a happy side to my life. We just need to tap into it.
But if you start changing or start challenging people's basic assumptions, if they've grown up with the assumption that they're worthless, and this is what my family tried to do to me. I was one of the not only seen but not heard, but don't have any ambition, don't try anything, you're not going to succeed, you'll never be a good parent, you'll never have a career, you're never going to do, you know, the list of nevers was endless. And so I rebelled by doing everything I could and became the overachiever. I got 2 college degrees. You know, I sold an airplane at 16, and you know my story, right? But the depression that I went through about maybe 6-7 years ago now, was actually a rebirth. And so what I was able to do during 2 years of intense, and I'm talking about intense, self-work and self-journey, was able to cast off all the assumptions that they were giving me, the conditioning that I was given, and return to my natural person. And it's the natural person that's able to action radio. And people are terrified of it. Yeah. But, you know, don't be afraid of being afraid. You know, don't be afraid of having every assumption challenged, because there is something at the other side of that that you can't imagine how wonderful it is.
Let's talk about this for a second. Frequency work, as far as sound bowl healing, music healing, audio therapy, stuff like that, what is beautiful about that is that if there is resonance, if you need healing on that frequency, let's say 528 hertz, love and manifestation, it restores your DNA, such as that. If you're in a prime situation, place in life, and that resonance doesn't need to heal you, unlike a pharmaceutical drug, all it's going to do is help you maintain that current state that you're already maintaining, just gives it a little bath, if you will, and it doesn't have a negative effect on you, and it also doesn't overstimulate you like a drug would. If I just like we've talked the last 3 weeks, if I take a drug that my body doesn't need, quote unquote, doesn't need, because we don't need them, then I could have a moment of chaotic manic episode because I didn't need that. Whereas these ways of healing that we're trying to show to the world, it helps you if it needs to help you. And if it doesn't, then it's not going to hurt you and it's not going to make your mind spin out of control. And that's vitally important in today's world, because so many people think, like you went through depression and you see it how it should be seen. It was a resurrection. Well, a lot of people see depression as, I'm going to kill myself tomorrow, versus, I could be rebirthed tomorrow and see that there's new doors opening for me and I need to shed what's going on in this current life. So that's the difference, is that what we're doing can't hurt you. It can only help you. And you went through that. You didn't allow fear to hold you back from addressing your childhood trauma, your inner demons and stuff like that. It might have been scary and you thought maybe I'm going to lose my belief system. A lot of Christians don't want to do what we're doing because they think it's going to make them stop believing in God. Hi, I have went through years with Paige now and tons of retreats and self-work, and my belief in God is stronger than it's ever been in my life. So I think that's a big thing. People don't want, they're scared that it's going to change them in a bad way, when in reality it can't.
Well, is it a change, or is it a loss of the assumptions that they're comfortable with, even if those assumptions are wrong?
They don't want to realize that maybe they've been seeing it wrong for a long time, but that's their ego talking. It's okay. We're not perfect. Once we know something, that's when we can be held accountable for it. So people need to give themselves grace and realize that you come to the realization when your soul's supposed to.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It comes back to like the science of all of it too, with fear and failure and all of it, is that like we have DNA that interweaves us all, not only with each other, not only with the plants, the animals, but also with God. And so if we imagine that there's time capsules in our DNA, like we have to be patient with when our time capsule opens. Some of us come in carrying this higher consciousness at 2 years old, and then others of us, we don't have that time capsule open until we're 45. And there's no rush. Like, this isn't about
or late 50s.
Rush. Like, yeah, exactly.
Hey, I'm a late
exactly.
bloomer. It's okay. Yeah. Yeah, don't be afraid of what you're being told to be afraid of. So much of this is conditioning. It's really scary how this all works. But, look at these journeys. Look at the things. You know, think about the possible. Everybody's like the pessimistic. You know, they're always worried about the worst thing that can happen. Well, what's the worst thing that can happen when you fail? Well, try something else. we have to demystify that. But I think Lindsay said something really fascinating. She actually said 538 hertz. So the science.
528.
Okay, good. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But the science is so good now, measuring spirituality, measuring frequencies of human beings, measuring, connecting our emotions to actual physical frequencies of vibrations, of cycles per second. you know, this is fascinating to me. I want to explore this more because you're opening up whole worlds for me that I never thought about. And I think people, if they understood that, you know, what you hear the science is, you know, the science of these jabs that are basically rearranging your DNA, your God-given DNA is being stolen, you know, by the most fearful megalomaniac controlling people on the planet. You know, the science government doctors. And it's almost like to preserve yourself, you have to preserve your DNA. So it's taking the jab. That's first of all. Secondly, they're measuring things that have never been measured before. And so I'm a little more curious about that. If we have let's come up at the top of the hour. I don't know how much more time you guys have, but let's talk a little bit more about this actual science. So that's where they're going. Paige mentioned this earlier too, that the connection, the doctors you mentioned, are physically connecting our spirits to a literal frequency of energy.
Yes, it's called the prime resonance frequency. That's the scientific term. And everything has a frequency. And one science can measure that, which they can. We even have something called the cymoscope that measures the frequency and the power of the human voice. Once we understand that, we can understand the frequency of everything from bacteria, an atom, the frequency of a soccer field. Then we can manipulate that and use these prime resonance frequencies to raise it so that let's think about it. If somebody's murdered on a soccer field, that soccer field is now considered haunted, whereas in reality, that's not the case. We can definitely restore the positive energy of that area. I mean, it's all science. They're all looking into it. They even have the frequencies for our chakras right now. For example, our crown chakra, the top of your head, carries a 963 hertz, your third eye an 852, your root a 369. They have been doing this science. There it is back. And again, it goes back to the fear of people thinking that working with these numbers and these chakra systems are going to disconnect you from your connection with God. In reality, it's strengthening your soul, your confidence, and your singular thought process. It's going to keep you from being so easily influenced by these negative things around you. So I think it's beautiful to be able to connect all of this together. Yeah.
When you have a female that's had multiple abortions, especially late-term abortions, that womb is a haunted house. It's a haunted house in Amityville in real life, a car where people have been killed, people just can't drive it. I know of people, homes that people can't stay in the house because phenomenal things are going on. But you have a female that had a dozen abortions, especially late term, where they had to tear the baby up in the womb, that womb is haunted.
Well, you also have to take the other side of that double-edged sword and understand that we also have miscarriages and loss, and that still causes womb trauma. And I don't think it's how we expel that child that might have had a chance on this planet. I think it's the trauma that's held within us. A big way of healing that trauma is the compassion for not only yourself, but the child that you then would be able to carry if you were able to carry a full-term child and have that birth. You can't sit there and just be disappointed and hate yourself for a miscarriage or an abortion, because what you do when you do that is you're allowing evil to win. You have to allow your soul to repent and to heal so that you can have the compassion to carry a beautiful child within your body and have it and then give it a beautiful life. If you don't do that, your pregnancy is just going to be, I don't think I deserve this. Do I deserve it? Fear. And then you have the baby and you're like, is this baby born with the resentment of what I've done in my past? Whereas if you forgive yourself and repent and give yourself compassion and know that you're going to love this child right, you'll know that baby's born in love and light, and it changes everything. As a mother, it's really, you have to have that compassion. You have to forgive yourself, and you have to be able to understand that when God gives you a child, we can love it without guilt and shame of what's happened in our past. Don't hold your past decisions onto this child that you do end up bringing into this life. That's very vitally important to hear.
Yeah, but you know, you made mention of a miscarriage. Go ahead, ma'am. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I was just going to say, it's just like to put that like in such. Like, yes, there are people dealing with hauntings and things like that. I've done so many house cleansing and blessings from spirits that are stuck on earth for 200 plus years. But when we think about, you know, a baby in the womb, and this is coming back to, you know, Vedic astrology, 5,500-year-old, you know, practices, and then the whole thing of energy, like we are energy. And it has been shown that the soul of a baby does not come into that baby until 3 months before gestation. And this isn't about my own belief system. This is just factual things. And so, you know, Vedic Western astrology where you're like, oh, my sun sign's, you know, Pisces, like that is not based. That's based off when you're born exactly. But the soul comes in before. And so as a medium, working with women that have had abortions, I have seen, and I don't know when they got it, I have no idea, but I saw the soul of that baby. And that soul told me that it is the same soul connected to every woman who has had an abortion because they were meant to go through that lesson in this life because we cannot actually end life. Again, this isn't about my personal preference. It's about that release of judgment and choosing that eagle eye point of view of the big picture. So I just felt called to share that.
Yeah. Well, you know, if Jesus was coming back and he was going to come back through the womb, how many times has he been aborted? And I have experienced in Burkina Faso at the northern end of Ghana in the Devara tribe where a pregnant mother would go into a ceremony with a priest, and the grandmother, the father was not allowed to come in. I was allowed to come in. And that pregnant mother would go into a trance and the baby would begin to speak from her mouth. The baby would tell who they are that's coming back and what they want prepared. The baby is coming from where, and this is a male child. When the male child gets off the mother's tit, the male child is not placed with the father. The male child is placed with the grandfather because the child has come from where the grandfather is about ready to go back to.
Oh, that's deep.
So that's how that works. I've seen women, and I didn't witness this, that was going to the market, and the market is miles off. She would leave and come back 15 minutes later with groceries through a process called teleportation within those cultures and societies.
I would love to go visit that. I would love to go see that.
Road trip.
Action Radio.
Well, actually, you know, I've had plans all along that we do some traveling. That we embark on voyages of discovery, you know, and as we share the whole idea of citizen legislation, of people writing the laws that they are governed by, which is a revolution in itself, that we will learn and we will experience all these different cultures and find ways to take in all these things that are happening out there and sort of bring them for ourselves. So I jokingly say road trip, but I've already got a friend in Belize. We're going to be, you know, spending a week down there as soon as travel things open up, and I got a few more sponsors here. So there are already plans in the works to do that. And so we're all going to go. Shelby's going to get us a cruise, an entire Action Radio cruise.
That's an amazing idea.
We
literally go visit people who this is their foundation.
Mm-hmm.
You know something else. My grandson's father passed away. That's my son-in-law. So in our culture, he immediately comes to me, which he has been since he's about 3 years old. He's 25 now. I remember one day that at the funeral, we all met over at my wife's mother's house. And they was in the kitchen, and the kids was in the living room. in a little while, two kids came in and said, there's a man in there, in the room. There's a man in the room. And my wife goes in there, she doesn't see anybody. But the kids seen the spirit of him coming to where these activities was going on. My grandmother had this power to see spirits also. When I was a kid, my mother died at Barnes Hospital. She went to the door and pulled back the curtain down there my mother stood. Then she gathered me up and we went to make a phone call where she found out that my mother had died in the hospital. So there's much truth to these things that people claim to see and experience. The ultimate question is, or the ultimate answer, those who haven't just don't know. And you can't dispel what other people say.
Yep. Hey, Greg, I just had to let you know that I'm about to have to log off.
No, that's fine.
But
this has been great.
Say thank you all for amazing, amazing conversation. I feel like we could continue the topic forever.
Well, we'll just pick it up next week, you know, and this is the thing, too, that as much time as you have or as little time as you have, you know, we got three of you. We'll get you, hopefully, Chancey next week. You know, she'll be back. And it's just because, you know, stuff comes up. And this is just an incredible gathering, you know. And, again, we're a workshop. This is not a radio show. This is a workshop of life, of people bringing things in, of incredible people coming together from very different areas, you know, and very different experiences and different places, you know, and different cultures, ancestries, everything. And so this is what makes this so fascinating. But I want to explore more things. I want to do, you know, if you want to talk more about the chakra system and how it works and the frequencies and how we can have multiple frequencies, you know, vibrating at the same time at different levels. This is all fascinating to me. It's a whole new world. Can't wait to meet you all in person. And so, you know, read me. You know, I was like, well, tell me about me. Tell me something I don't know about me already, which is probably a lot. But, I'm fairly far along in the process, I think, just from my own analysis. And I think that's that you really supposed to do that.
I picked things up on you. I just haven't. It's still all coming together. I could definitely spend some time telling you some things that I've been giving towards you.
Interesting. When it's right, let me know. Say that again, Lindsay.
Lindsay's amazing. And I haven't to be honest, I haven't even tried to tap in with you. I just let you be you.
What, are you shocked at what you might find?
I don't know.
Better leave this guy alone. Yeah, yeah. Well, I have a feeling I have a very strong energy field just because.
You definitely have support around you as well. You have a very strong driving force that supports you at all times. So just be aware of that.
I love my support system, all my guardian angels and everybody else, you know, both physical and spiritual. Oh, I know. Believe me, I know.
Yes, it's very obvious. But when the time's right, we'll sit down and we'll have that discussion because it deserves the respect that it deserves. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's a deep conversation to have with you because you're a very deep person.
Well, thank you. So are you. You know,
but
all
I
of
do
you
have to let you know. I got to get breakfast going for these little kiddos inside.
Okay. Any contact information that you want to give in page two? Let's get that. Then we'll take a little break.
My contact information is my email. If you want to email me for just to have a talk or anything like that, set anything up is lghorton33@gmail.com. And you can find my Reiki healing videos on TikTok at Lindsay Galen Horton. Thank you very much, Greg.
Well, thank you, too.
Bye,
and, yeah, I definitely want to talk.
Okay. I
really
love
want
you.
To talk
I'll
now.
Talk to you soon, honey.
Yeah.
I love you, too.
Paige? Oh, you guys.
Yes, my website is officially complete. And
yay.
So you can find me at www.theawakeningoracle.com. And I will begin seeing patients in person in Pensacola starting Monday, 8/8. And I also offer virtual sessions through Zoom as well.
Yeah, I bet you that'd be interesting. But I definitely want to meet you in person because we haven't met yet. And feel free to post, and this goes for Lindsay and Chancey too, post anything you want on our new modified life and health coaching page. So that'll be some good. Also, I want to see your website there so I can take a look. And we'll talk to you next
week. Absolutely. And thank you. Paige. I can't remember your name right this moment, but thank you.
Oh, Bianchi? He's here too.
Bianchi. Okay. Yes. Thank you for your word and for your truth. It was grateful to, I'm grateful to just connect and share space. It's funny talking without faces. So, yeah. See you next week, guys.
Be safe wherever you go.
Absolutely.
Thank you all. And this is the beauty of radio is that you know, we're connecting on this mental, spiritual level. And I've met Lindsay. I met Chansey. I haven't met Bianchi. I haven't met Paige. I have met Wendy. You know, and it's, I don't know if there's much difference in the way that because of the way we connect here on Action Radio, I don't think there's a huge difference between meeting in person. And but it's actually different. It's like meeting a brand new person. You know, the person that you meet, you know, whatever you bring into it, you know, from our conversations here, it's very different. Bianchi, anything you want to add to this? And I'm going to play a couple things and we'll do our Santa Rosa Volunteers founding moments and we'll come back and actually another day where we sort of get to the, well, I do want to get to the topic of the title today of the show. I want to talk about the body snatching of Joe Manchin, which I think is kind of interesting. We'll do a little bit of politics. This has been a pretty incredible day so far. What do you think? I'm happy.
Well, yeah, the body can only, the mind can only consume so much at one setting.
Yeah,
and the information had to be dispersed and filed and categorized. You know. But then you're ready for some more.
You know, it's interesting. I listen to the shows mostly. I mean, not every bit of every show, but I'm fascinated with things that I hear in the show as a listener that I didn't really pick up because as I'm running the show, I'm thinking of different things, you know, next question, who's going to speak, you know, the mechanics of the show, when do I take a break, you know, and sort of incorporating that in to, you know, then I'll make these big statements. Like, then I hear the answer to it, then I have to go back and do other stuff. It's fascinating how this all works. All right, take a break. Back in a little bit. And first of all, I want to announce that we have three affiliate groups here. So if you want to help us out, which I would appreciate, you can be a contributor. You can sponsor advertising. You know, go to Greg at writeyourlaws.com, my email, and let me know. But also affiliates, and they all have the same discount code, WYL, stands for Write Your Laws. So back in a little bit, and we'll talk more. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with My Pillow and now goes to My Coffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of My Pillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. My Pillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well, so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code,
WYL to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engine. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Grace Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is gracecare.com. That's G-R-A-I-T-H-care.com. You can email them at gracecare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, SRV1776.com. That's SRV1776.com. This is one of the shortest of any Federalist or Anti-Federalist papers and gets right to the main issue of taxes in the first paragraph. It's written by Cincinnatus, whom we've heard from before, and this paper is in response to Hamilton's Federalist No. 12 plan for the United States to make lots of money under the Constitution. He begins Anti-Federalist number 12. On the subject of taxation, in which powers are to be given so largely by the new Constitution, you lull our fears of abuse by venturing to predict that the great revenue of the United States must and always will be raised by impost, and you elevate our hopes by holding out the reviving and supporting the national credit. If you have any other plan for this than by raising money upon the people to pay the interest of the national debt, your ingenuity will deserve our thanks. Supposing, however, that raising money is necessary to payment of the interest, and such a payment is requisite to support the credit of the Union, let us see how much will be necessary for that end, and how far the impost will supply what we want. He then proceeds in a bunch of numbers to back up his claim that the scheme basically won't work, will cost more than expected, and taxes will have to be raised. All the same problems we have today in the trillions of dollars of national debt. The money to run the country is supposed to come from imposts, which are taxes on imported goods. What Cincinnatus is questioning is whether the figures of revenue raised are accurate or intentionally misleading. This leads to the accusation still around today that government officials are either stupid or liars. He says, "We know too that our imports diminish yearly and from the nature of things must continue to diminish, and consequently that the above estimate of the produce of the impost will in all probability fall much short of the supposed sum. But even without this, it must appear that you were either intentionally misleading your hearers or were very little acquainted with the subject when you ventured to predict that the great revenue of the United States would always flow from the impost." This also documents the long-standing practice that government revenues will be short of estimates and costs will be higher. Cincinnatus then correctly states that when the federal government can't cover its bills the way it says it can, they will go to the states to cover the debt. And that is a great reason not to ratify the Constitution. The power to tax is uncontrolled with regard to the states, he says. It will be expected that the new government will provide for this also, and such expectation is founded not only on the promise you hold forth of its reviving and supporting public credit among us, but also on this unavoidable principle of justice, that is, the new government takes away the impost and other substantial taxes from the produce of which the several states paid the interest of their debt or funded the paper with which they paid it. The new government must find ways and means of supplying that deficiency in hard money, for paper cannot be used without a violation of the principles it boasts. Cincinnatus is really good at explaining things and doesn't need any help from me. In his final paragraph, he clearly delineates the differences between the current Articles of Confederation and the proposed Constitution, and talks of the realities of the former compared to the expectations of the latter. Well, expectations are easy to declare, but much harder to meet, which is the point of the final paragraph, that the Federalists simply want the people to trust them, and they will manage everything. Sound familiar? However, Cincinnatus warns that the more likely end for such an all-encompassing grant of power is that the wealth will be squandered, the revenues will not be raised, and the full faith and credit of the United States will be ruined. And now, the national debt stands at some $30 trillion. Cincinnatus concludes, "The present government promises nothing, the intended government, everything. From the present government, little is expected. From the intended one, much. Because it is conceived that to the latter much is given, to the former little. And yet the inability of the people to pay what is required in specie, remaining the same, the funds of the one will not much exceed those of the other. The public creditors are easy with the present government from a conviction of its inability to pay. They will be urgent with the new one from an opinion that as is promised, so it can and will perform everything. Whether the change will be for our prosperity and honor is yet to be tried. Perhaps it will be found that the supposed want of power in Congress to levy taxes is, at present, a veil happily thrown over the inability of the people, and that the large powers given to the new government will, to every one, expose the nakedness of our land. Certain it is that if the expectations which are grafted on the gift of those plenary powers are not answered, our credit will be irretrievably ruined." Action Radio is now sponsoring a constitutional amendment to remove the power of Congress to borrow money. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it.
Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
My radio voice. Right, let's bring back Bianchi. Let's get back on the. We've got about 32 minutes to play with here. It almost seems like a come down from these incredible topics we talk about to get into something as mundane as politics. But since that's such a part of because we're forced to deal with it. But I really enjoyed that hour. I enjoyed the hour yesterday with Dorothy Diana. We've got some pretty incredible people on this show. Pianki, did you ever think we'd be here, you know, when you first started listening to us, what, 3, maybe 4 years ago? I think it's been 4 years, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I don't know how long it's been, but, you know, when you come along right at the right time when there's other things going on that people need answers to, and you can provide to them what they are inquisitive of, that makes a lot of room for success.
You know, it's funny you say that because I've never timed anything well in my entire life. It's pretty crazy. You know, I wanted to be an Air Force pilot when, and then shortly afterwards, my eyesight went bad and I started wearing glasses. You know, I finally got to flight school and I finally got all my hours and I finally got all my, you know, ATP, CFI, multi-instruments, you know, instructor and all that kind of good stuff right when the airlines went broke. You know, and there's no students and no money, and I sort of lost all my flight skills. Timing is not my specialty, but for some reason, everything that I've done, you know, when you put it all together, every one of those things has a major part to play in the creation of Action Radio. And so this is why I say, this is another one of my strong, you know, beliefs in God that, you know, had I known, I don't know if I would have done all the things I've done, but not knowing and seeing all these disparate puzzle pieces, finally seeing them all come together now, it's like, oh, now I know what you had in mind. Thanks. I wish you'd let me know earlier. It would have felt a lot easier over the years. But, yeah, it's fascinating. So I want to...
Well, everyone...
Go ahead.
Everyone believes in something. They have to... Even those who don't believe in God believe in that. It's the ability of people to respect others for their positions.
Yeah.
And to the project that's on the table, because they... apparently have something to offer that would help it to become successful.
Yeah. Well, what's going to make me successful is everybody that's gathered onto the show and the things that we're doing and the just pursuing an idea and doing it, I think, for the right reasons. You know, my goal is freedom, the greatest amount of freedom for the greatest number of people. And that means worldwide. And so with that as my basic charge, you know, I'm open to whatever will get us there. It's quite interesting how it's working out. I want to go to politics for a bit because, unfortunately, these people control so much of our lives that my goal is to change that balance so that we, the people, start writing the laws that we consent to be governed by. And like I say, Monday, we took a giant step towards that with 2 huge interviews. And there are more coming. I've got one next week. So more and more talk show hosts, hopefully I'll be able to convert them to Action Radio hosts and they'll be doing what we do. You know, legislation. But Manchin, we're in a precarious situation right now. If you look at the Congress, we're in a situation where the Republicans actually won in 2018 and 2020, had the election stolen by Democrats, just enough representatives to put the House in the hands of the Democrats, which the Republicans could have fought but didn't, and that's how we got Nancy Pelosi and the impeachments and everything else. The Senate is in this weird position where, I don't know, I think since 2018, I don't know what happened then. No, the Republicans had the majority then, but they probably in 2020, because even though the Senate split 50-50, Mitch McConnell refused to have joint committees. You know, they said, well, Kamala Harris can come in and break a tie. Well, that's only when they have a tie vote. The rest of the time, she's not part of the Senate. And therefore, the senators are 50-50, Republicans and Democrats. And therefore, all committees should be joint. But he didn't do that. So we've got an imbalance of power once again given away by the Republicans to the Democrats for no reason. They let votes be stolen. They let election results be changed. And they let bizarre and stupid rules come in so that the Democrats, who aren't the majority, are acting as the majority in the Senate, which is fascinating. Well, one of the fly in the ointment folks is Joe Manchin. And Joe Manchin's quite interesting. Also, Kristjen Sinema. I'll do her in a separate show when I get a chance to take a look at her legislative history, but she's quite intriguing also. But Manchin, I thought, was this superhero, was this great guy who was actually, you know, very much common sense and realized that if you spend money, you can't, you can't stop inflation by spending money, because spending money means borrowing money, and borrowing money means printing money, and printing money means inflation. So that's a contradiction. And I thought he knew that, but apparently not. So he apparently is following a very familiar pattern where he plays with the debate, plays the hero, and then ultimately caves for what he was going to do anyway. But in the meantime, he has a lot of fun, gets a lot of notoriety and a lot of attention for pretending to do something he never intended to do anyway, which was the right thing, you know, in getting rid of the climate change votes, the super tax bill that supposedly is going to stop inflation, and all the other things he's done. And what I found was an article by Red State, one of the most misnamed websites out there, because apparently conservatives have forgotten that red means communism. And when Bill Clinton took those red and blue squares or red and blue state maps that they use for elections, they used to flip every election. It was, you know, the Republicans were red one, you know, presidential election, and then they were blue the next one. Well, Clinton made the Republicans red and the Democrats blue because Clinton's smart enough to understand symbolism and understand that if the Republicans are always thought of as red, then red doesn't always mean communism. It means the Democrats can avoid that label. Interesting political psychology, but it works. Anyway, so back to Joe Manchin. I've got an article here from Red State, and this goes back to 2014. I find the best articles are usually several years old. They give you all kinds of insights. And this is by Unsilent Majority. They didn't even want to put their name on it. It says, why Joe Manchin will not flip to Republican. Now, I looked at this and I thought this was written, you know, recently, but apparently not. It was written November 7th of 2014. So this is 2 years before Trump, you know, was nominated and became president in 2016. West Virginia is finally red, which I dispute that term, after 84 years of Democrat dominance, joined by a Republican congressional sweep, which left U.S. Senator Joe Manchin the lone Democrat in Congress, you know, assuming from Virginia. Well, that's interesting in itself, right? The article says the question on many national pundits' minds is, will Manchin flip to Republican? The short answer is no. And it goes to show how little the national political outlets understand internal West Virginia politics. I found this article interesting because I don't understand West Virginia politics, but this person does. And says, here's the long answer. Joe Manchin is the Democrat Party in West Virginia and is one of the reasons Democrats lost big, both on the federal and state levels. Manchin is probably one of the best political actors on the national stage, maybe even better than President Bill Clinton, shows when this is written. From the sets of CNN to the soundstage of Morning Joe, Manchin has the national press convinced that he is a conservative Democrat. They believe Manchin is a man who is not afraid to go against the Democrat leadership in the U.S. Senate and cross the aisle to work with Republicans. This is the role that John McCain used to fulfill, except from the Republicans. He was the maverick. He was the good guy. He's a good Republican because he would cross the aisle, compromise, and shake hands. Well, yeah. You know what we think of John McCain. War service not included, but politically he sucked. You know, turncoat into two American first. Go ahead, Bianchi.
Democrats were associated strongly with conservatism at one point in time.
Very true.
Blacks moved to the Democrats, and they brought their conservative values of family and so. See, there's certain things that you got to have in order for things to work out the right way. You have a preponderous number of people in California, for instance, Massachusetts, that has very high-paying skills. But how do the Democrats take advantage of that? Well, they tax the hell out of them. Well, they got some money to tax. So at one point in time...
This is a good thing to talk about too, because you think of the guilt. Why would somebody with a high income live in a high tax state? That's against their self interest, unless their guilt is stronger than their self interest.
Here's the thing too, Greg.
Okay.
People with those high type skills usually are single. Very seldom. I need to say very seldom. I don't know what the percentage of the numbers are, but they usually are single. And they don't have a lot of kids, and they don't have those family values that would equate to conservatism. They're open for entertainment, which can go anywhere, and it usually does. So when conservatives get away, you always hear me say, you got to educate your children. In the ways of conservatism, and also in the ways of skills that's going to be needed, especially those skills that pay high wages and high salary. Because if not, you're going to fall into that trap or that paradigm where you just don't have time. Then you fall for like you have one of your guests talking about the food that we eat. You got another guest that talks about the lack of family morals that should be picked up in the church. And it just goes on and on and on, and ultimately you have what you got.
Yeah, it's a lot to think about, you know, putting all these different factors together, but I don't know.
You know, you talk about Manchin, but how much pressure is conservatives putting on Manchin? I mean, that's not that because he's a Democrat, but it's the values that he carries. You know, as I said before, you got to, it's these values, these interests that you want to promote, you want to push forward, no matter what banner they come under.
Well, that's why Manchin's interesting, because it looked like he was the one who's holding out against the massive spending that was going to cause massive inflation. And now apparently he's caved to Chuck Schumer. What I found from reading several articles is that this isn't the first time. And that's why I put this 2014 article. This goes back a ways. You know, that was, what's it, 2022 now? So that's, what, 8 years ago? You know, so this is not unusual for Joe Manchin to do what he's doing now, to want to be the center of attention, to want to be the kingmaker, the player, the deal maker, the one to, you know, bring about these different circumstances and then ultimately cave. Well, apparently, like I say, he's caving to pattern. I find out Christian Sinema is different, because all it takes is one Democrat to you know, leave the plantation, as we say, to have an independent thought, and that screws up their whole thing. Then they don't have a majority anymore. And Democrats are very good at marching in lockstep. But you mentioned conservative Democrats earlier. It's interesting. You know, and talking about, you know, blacks that might have gravitated to the Democrat Party because of the family values. You know, conservative Democrats who've, let me see, I don't know if you call Truman conservative. Kennedy was in his family values rather interesting, but in his personal and his country values was very conservative. Anybody else had vision? You know, the Democrats that, you know, were conservative, like the Scoop Jackson Democrats, very pro-national defense, very pro-America. You know, there's been a whole host of Democrats. Sam Nunn, I think, wasn't he a Republican, Democrat, Georgia senator, pro-defense? You know, so there have been Democrats along the way. But
you
Democrats
mean Carter?
Who?
Carter? Jimmy Carter.
Yeah,
Jimmy Carter was a Democrat.
Well, he was definitely a Democrat. Well, he sort of was both. I mean, he had his problem was the globalists. I mean, he was tied in with Zbigniew Brzezinski and Henry Kissinger and the globalists. You know, so he lost his way. He ceased being a nationalist and became a globalist. And once you adopt globalist principles, you lose it. Because then your nation doesn't count anymore. What counts is the global collective, you know. And if you think you're too important to represent your nation anymore, you think you're more important representing the whole planet, then you kind of lose your way. But we're getting a little,
well,
little far from field. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, but if you can teach that, you have to teach that nationalism to your young people.
Mm-hmm. Nationalism is a good thing.
Bring up a child in the right way, he won't depart when he gets to come old.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the whole idea of nationalism is a good thing, you know, and people say, well, you know, white supremacy. No, it's not. I mean, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was a socialist in economic policy, but was a nationalist when it came to World War II. He didn't surrender. He attacked. Okay. You know, a globalist might have surrendered and said, well, this is the new world order. This is the way the world's going
to
be rearranged.
Well, people that want to go to heaven are nationalists. They don't want to go to hell.
How does that make you a nationalist?
Because they promote things about heaven. Streets paved in gold, milk and honey. There's no pain and suffering.
So you're saying
so they have a nationalist.
So trying to create a nation that's closer to heaven in terms of the way we can live in it?
You live your heaven here, right here on earth. Heaven and hell, right here on earth.
Yeah, well, I've seen both. So, yeah, right now I'm way into the heaven side, so life's pretty good. But the streets paved with gold, it's actually interesting where that comes from. During the San Francisco gold rush, everybody was dealing in gold dust. And when they tried to measure and they did stuff and wind and whatever else, tiny, tiny flakes of gold would fall on the floor. And when they got swept out of the stores, they'd go to the sidewalks, and from the sidewalks, they'd get into the mud, you know, down below the sidewalk, the boardwalks, right? And so a lot of folks, Asians, especially in Chinatown, would literally crawl under and pick up flecks of gold, and you could actually make a living doing that, strangely enough. And so the streets literally were paved with gold. There was gold dust in the streets of San Francisco. That's where that comes from. All right, let's get back to...
well, that doesn't come from there because in the temples there in Egypt between Ifrit, and Karnak, those streets between those temples were laid with gold.
Oh, that's interesting. So those streets really were paved with gold. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's the original expression. Yellow Brick Road, Wizard of Oz, is symbolic of the gold standard, allegedly, for those that do literary analysis. And Oz was Washington. We should do that. I should look that up and do the there was a course actually in high school that part of their English class, the AP, the really bright students, which I was never asked to join, which is kind of interesting. You know, this is one of those family things. Well, you're not smart enough to be in the advanced classes, even though they're all my friends and we all talked about the same things. It was quite a fascinating little dichotomy there. But anyway, they one of their, I guess, units they covered is the similarities of the Wizard of Oz as an allegory, as a metaphor, with Oz as Washington, D.C., and the Yellow Brick Road as the gold standard. And I've forgotten what the three, the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion represented. And what the witch represented, probably the nanny state. I don't know. Anyway.
But if you want to really see, all one merely has to do is look at what's coming under attack today.
Mm-hmm.
The family, the purpose of your morals, you know, those are the things that's being attacked. Look what they're doing to the kids in the schools.
Well, this is all the communist plan. Apparently, there's nothing new here. The stripping of identity, the removal of God, the gender, you know, unifying, you know, and not in a good way, you know, I mean, the unigender. All this kind of stuff is all, you know, the lack of patriotism, the emphasis on race, the complete disassociation with your own country. All that stuff is normal communist. That's just communist doctrine. That's you know, communism. So there's nothing unusual about that. What's unusual is that it's happening here. Anyway, let me get a little bit more. We only got about 14 minutes left actually now, and I want to get this out there. So folks that are looking to understand what Manchin's doing, because he's pivotal right now. If he votes differently on any issue, it changes. You know, if the Democrats vote one way and the Republicans vote another, and they split 50-50, if he, you know, makes it 49-50. First of all, Kamala Harris won't come in to break a tie because there isn't one, and the Republicans win. That's why this is so critical. So this was such a mistake that he voted for this huge, you know, inflation bill that's actually supposedly an anti-one. Anyway, I want to go back to this a little bit here. It says they believe Manchin is the man who is not afraid to go against the Democrat leadership in the U.S. Senate and cross the aisle to work with Republicans. He was the co-chair of the independent No Labels group until today. This was back in 2014. Just a little nudge, and he could flip and join the new Republican majority in the Senate. Again, people who think the decision for Manchin to flip is an easy one just don't understand West Virginia politics. There's no way Manchin will flip, especially if he decides to abandon the Senate and make a run for a third term as governor of the Mountain State. So Manchin is a Democrat. He's always going to be a Democrat. He's not going to be a Republican, and he's certainly not conservative. And I think we all need to know that. He says, let's go back in time a few years. Since 2005, when Joe Manchin first took the governor's mansion, the Democrat Party in West Virginia had been completely controlled by Manchin and those in his machine. I didn't even know he had a machine, but apparently he does. Right? Nick Casey, who just lost a bid for West Virginia's second congressional district against Republican Alex Mooney, was one of Manchin's first hand-picked chairs of the state Democrat Party. This sounds very Democrat to you know, the whole kingmaker, the whole strategy, the way this all works. Obama does that now. He wants to pick everybody that runs. It says, ever since, the state Democrat Party strategy was to be Republican-like while getting liberals elected. Sound familiar? This is deception. This is right out of Sun Tzu. It says, more recently, Manchin's former chief of staff, Larry Puccio, has ran the state Democrat Party as chairman. Manchin went on to the U.S. Senate after Robert C. Byrd died. Earl Ray Tomlin, the state Senate president, was groomed as Manchin's successor in the mansion. That's got to give you the Manchin, M-A-N-C-H-I-N, and the governor's Manchin, M-A-N-S-I-O-N, keeping most of Manchin's department executives and staff. They have long tried to push liberal Natalie Tennant onto the electorate, first as a candidate for governor this year. Okay, that's fine. Let me get more to the perception stuff. Manchin was the puppet master behind all this. Republicans in West Virginia already know this already. He would never be welcome as a Republican in West Virginia and definitely not trusted. But Joe isn't a Republican with a D by his name. He's a Democrat through and through. But he knows West Virginia is trending more and more conservative. He has ran the publicly as GOP light, but voters finally saw through it. So this guy's he's not who he seems. I find that
interesting. Well, yeah, but it still goes back. It goes back, like you said, it's trending. So that means you got younger minds coming along that's
right.
thinking different than the ones before them was conditioned into thinking.
Mm.
It takes work. It's just like a garden. You got to do all the things necessary in order to reap what you sow.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's another one. This is from 2021. Again, this was Joe Manchin folds like a wash and wear suit. By Bonchi, B-O-N-C-H-I-E, or Bonchili, C-H-L-E, it's hard to tell. June 22nd, 2021, so last year. Just do this real quickly. Last week, a phone call between Joe Manchin and billionaire activists from a supposedly centrist group called No Labels. There's that group again, right, from the previous article. What was revealed was a senator with a spine made of overcooked spaghetti who was desperately trying to find a way to straddle the fence on the For the People Act, the Democrats' gambit to federally take over elections and turn the country into a one-party state. Manchin has already announced he would vote no on the bill, explaining that such a move would only cause further division, yet in a move repeated over and over in his career, he's going back on his word, trying to tout an amendment watering down the bill a bit, which won't pass Democrat muster, much less Republican, as some kind of magic compromise. This is what happened this time. Remember with the big inflation bill. Manchin, promised to uphold it or hold it up, and you can't spend your way out of inflation. You only create more inflation. You can't raise taxes in a recession. You only get more recession. And yet he just caved to Chuck Schumer recently and voted for this massive inflation spending bill. I didn't think that to me seemed unusual until I read about Manchin. I realized not only is it not unusual, it's completely characteristic. This is what he does. What do you think?
Schumer is sick, and of course he comes from that state.
Yep. Well, he comes from New York. New York is really weird. You know, New York loves illegal aliens.
Yeah, he comes from that state. I stated it like that for a reason. He's one of those that come from that state.
Yeah. New York's got some weird policies. You look at the Cuomos, you look at everybody else that comes from there. And it's I don't know. They sure have lost their way since our founding, that's for sure. Here's another one. Senator Joe Manchin flip-flops on economy and climate bill. And this is the one recently. This is July 28, 2022, so just a few days ago. Same Joe Manchin, the originally referenced in 2005 in one of my previous articles. It says it only took 2 weeks for Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, to change his mind on how he will vote for the Inflation Reduction Act. Yeah, that's as badly named as Obama's Affordable Care Act, the Inflation Reduction Act. We're going to talk about that too. Anyway, as Manchin said in a press release, he is now voting for an energy and healthcare package after further discussion with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, who's really not the majority leader. He's actually the co-leader with McConnell, but McConnell refuses to stand up for the gelding old party and do something. My comments.
Well, where are the conservatives to put pressure on Manchin? You just can't let these people sit out there by themselves with no protection. You have to constantly put pressure on him. Apparently, he demonstrated that he can be made to go one way under pressure because he's done it in the past and it's flip-flop. Conservatives don't put forth the efforts that I think they should be putting forth in order to whip people into the right realm of action.
Well, here's the question. Is he pretending to be conservative? Is he pretending to create complications? Is he pretending to want to lower taxes when he really isn't? Is he pretending to be against green energy, that doesn't work when he really is? You know, does he do these things to get the attention, get the different votes, the money, the things like that, but then vote as a leftist Democrat? That's what I tend to
say. Well, the question could also be, is he pretending to be liberal?
Good question. I don't know. I go by voting record. His voting record is liberal. His talking points are more conservative. I think that's the problem. But again, talk doesn't count. Action does.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And so people need to hold his, I mean, there needs to be pressure put on Mass. Apparently, pressure has weighted him in the past.
Well, who's going to put pressure on him? If he's a Democrat, Republicans can't put pressure on him. Democrats will defend him.
Conservatives need to put pressure on him. They need to go to his office, visit him a dozen at a time, and, you know, read him the riot act.
Well, they could say, you know, you're the one vote of sanity in the Democrat Party. You've got to save us from these insane progressives. Unless he's one of those insane progressives. And that's the thing you have to find out. That's the part I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, you know, originally I thought he had been turned, co-opted, bribed, pressured, extorted, or something to make him change his mind so directly, so diametrically from what he preached and what he talked about, you know, is not wanting to spend all that money because it's going to be inflationary. And then he's spending all this money and it's going to be inflationary. I thought something external happened, but what I'm finding out is this is his character. This is who he is. He is the turncoat. He is the faker. He is the liar.
Threatening
he is the
liberal.
Hmm?
Threatening with recall. There's all kinds of ways that you could
well,
use
except
to
that, West Virginia
to these politicians.
Well, West Virginia is actually more of a liberal state, I guess, in some places. I mean, why would they have Manchin? Why would they have a Democrat as a senator? If West Virginia wasn't more liberal.
Isn't West Virginia a coal state?
Well, it is. And parts of it are really conservative. But they had Robert Byrd forever. And he was a Ku Klux Klan grand dragon, you know, racist.
Yeah, but I don't care about him being a Ku Klux Klan. And I look at what his policies are. And according to reports that the Biden's policies on oil, petroleum, is going to cause either West Virginia or Virginia, maybe Pennsylvania, is going to cost them about $10 billion over 10 years.
Mm.
A lot of money.
Yeah, it really comes down to economics. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, how that's going to shake out. Robert Byrd was fairly liberal as far as I could tell in voting records. He was Clinton's idol and mentor. You know, and Bill Clinton was certainly very progressive, except when it came to the Branch Davidians in Waco, who he assassinated. So it's... you know, it's the violent left does what the violent left does. Let me get you another paragraph here real quick. The details of the full spending of the bill have not been disclosed. Of course, they would with that 30-day comment bill. That's another reason for that one. And it says disclosed, but a summary of the bill gives us a clue of the spending agendas. $369 billion will go toward energy and climate change programs. Well, that's pork. That's just pure pork, $369 billion. So that's a waste. $64 billion would extend the Affordable Care Act. More pork. The bill also contains a tax hike on the largest corporations to pay at least 15%. The revenue gained from the tax hike would go back into funding for the bill. Manchin released a statement regarding his decision to vote for the bill. He says, I now propose and will vote for the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, which of course isn't. Rather than risking more inflation, which it will, with trillions in new spending, which it will, you know, this bill will cut the inflation taxes Americans are paying. Which it won't. I'm adding the extras, obviously. Lower the cost of health insurance and prescription drugs and ensure our country invests in the energy security and climate change solutions. Well, I don't think you could have both. If you believe that climate change is a problem, which it isn't, you know, and you're stopping CO2 and you're stopping, you know, petroleum-based energy, coal, oil, natural gas, and then, of course, nuclear energy, you can't have energy security. You can't have energy security if you're not actually using our energy. So that's a contradiction to me. Anyway, he sucked up to Schumer. What I'm calling thief in chief Biden, leader Schumer, and Speaker Pelosi have committed to advancing a suite of common sense, so-called, permitting reforms this fall. So they're going to push the green, you know, they'll push windmills and solar batteries. They think that's going to actually power this nation. Ain't going to happen.
You know what's going to be needed, and I hope it gets there, is that you're going to have states come out and say, hell no. There's nothing else. You don't try it everything. You got many mansions. You got many Chuck Schumers. Until the states, that's the only way you're going to put the handcuffs on the federal government is for states to say, hell no. You can vote till you're blue in the face, but it just won't happen. States have to go back and say, we are not going to do it.
Yeah.
That's getting back to the original.
Well, they have to also say, we're not going to pay. We're not going to pay the money to you to distribute back to us. You know, we're, the states
right.
really need to, the states need to enforce the Constitution. I mean, they really do. You know, and I'll tell you, I think if the states, once they learn that there's a bill to stop the borrowing of money by Congress, I think the states are going to, certain states are going to love it. The liberal states won't. Texas, Florida,
Wyoming. It goes to show
you
how bad they got blacks in America. Blacks in America own, you know, they vote for local government,
right.
but they look for federal government to make things happen. I mean, that there is totally backwards, and it don't work. It just don't work. There's no history of it working. How in the heck can you complain about a leaking roof for 40, 60, 70 years in some of these enclaves?
Yeah, that's true. And knowing that the federal government does not change, that they do not settle problems, that they perpetuate their own prejudice, their own, you know, victimization for their own political agenda, it's absurd. I mean, the whole thing is absurd the way this is working. I mean, it really is. So we'll see. We'll see.
Then you got a $30 trillion debt. These high-paid and high-salaried employees, these scientists and these computer scientists and other engineers, they're going to be paying this because they're going to look to them and say, you're not paying your what? Fair share.
Yep, and they're going to look to the states too. They're going to, you know, withhold money from the states. They're going to go after the 401ks. They're going to go after the investments. The death tax is going to increase. You know, it's like the more they're addicted to spending. Congress has an addiction problem. And the only way to solve that addiction problem is to take away the means to inflict their addiction on the rest of us, and that's to stop them from borrowing money. And that's why we have a constitutional amendment to do just that. Well, we can take that up at a future time. Tomorrow is our world's greatest doctors panel. So at 10 in the morning we start, 10 a.m. Central Time, with Drs. Mikovits, Thorpe, Artis, Marble, data expert John Cullen, and a few other folks I've roped into joining us tomorrow. So we'll see how that goes. And then Friday we start a little bit early for our gun reporters, Shirley, Jim, and our financial reporter, Derek. And I think Amber's out this week, too, our constitutional reporter. But we're still going to start at 6 in the morning. So 10 o'clock tomorrow, 6 o'clock Friday, and those are Central Time. And look at our production, look at our broadcast page here, and you'll find where all our discounts are, our affiliate discounts. And that's with MyPillow, Grace Care, and Strikeforce Energy Drinks. And so take a look at those. The site for all our shows is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And all our bills are at www.writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS. And if you want to contribute, we've got, let me see if I can find this here real quick. I got to find a quick way to find this because I moved this up around the broadcast page and I can't find it. PayPal.com, PayPal.me/actionradio. And my email, greg@writeyourlaws.com. And I think that's about it. So anyway, that'll do. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Central Time with the world's greatest doctors panel.